Yeah, good morning, everyone. Well, welcome back to day two. I've got a couple of announcements, but I want to first start off by thanking the Cape Cod Commercial Fishermen's Alliance for a reception last night. I think we all have a new appreciation for skates and dogfish. We're working hard to get coffee here all day to those who needed a lift like I did yesterday afternoon. We will be taking a break mid-morning sometime when it makes sense, but I'd like to try to shoot for, you know, halfway through. If we can get through Framework 51, we'll take a break between Framework 51 and the Amendment 18 discussion. But if not, we'll tee it off from there. And lastly, I'd like to pass on the sad news that Doug Rout's mom passed yesterday, and he greatly appreciates all the comments and concern that many council members have reached out to him with. So I'm going to turn the groundfish meeting over to the groundfish vice chair, Tom Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And anybody who now has a newfound respect for dogfish, we've got about 43 million more pounds to serve up. So go get your sweatpants. Since the last council meeting, the Groundfish Committee has met twice. The committee has met once jointly with the Habitat Committee, and the Groundfish Advisory Panel has met once as well. The PDT has met several times by conference call and once in person. For everyone following along, this is on your CD or in your packet behind the Groundfish tab. I believe that's tab 3. Most of the committee and meeting notes are available except for those held most recently, and those will be made available very shortly. So last week at the Groundfish Committee, the committee met to review the PDT analysis and recommendations from the advisory panel concerning Framework 51 and Amendment 18. Most of the committee's discussion was pertaining to the framework. I think most of the committee members anticipate that we'll be transitioning to a renewed focus on the development of the amendment directly following the completion of this framework, which is currently scheduled for final action at our next meeting in November. Additionally, we'll be waiting in terms of our Amendment 18 discussion for the receipt of the Compass Lexicon report on excessive shares, and we'll talk a little bit more about that during Rachel's presentation later today. So this morning, we'll receive an update from Jamie on Framework 51 and an update following that on the progress on Amendment 18 from Rachel. After these reports, I have a series of committee motions, some consensus statements for each action. So with that, I turn it over to Jamie. We're going to try to go through, if possible, go through the entire initial presentation on the framework and then try to address any questions after the fact. So unless it's burning and urgent, please hold off until Jamie's through her presentation. Jamie?
All right. Sorry about the feedback. It's unplugged. Okay. So I'm going to provide, does everybody hear me all right? An overview of where we are with Framework 51. Today we'll go over, I think that's the wrong presentation.
So while we bring that up, for anybody who wants to follow along, this is behind tab 3, document 17, the presentation on the Framework 51.
So this is the right presentation. So briefly, I'll just go through the Framework 51 timeline and a summary of the draft alternatives that are currently under consideration. And I want to refer you under tab 3 to document number 6. Document number 6 was a memo from the PDT to the Oversight Committee, and it actually walks through the draft alternatives under consideration. And this was a document that the committee looked at the meeting last week. So this document, the presentation follows the order of how this document is laid out. So that's for your reference. So at your June council meeting, you initiated Framework 51. And over the summer, the PDT has been working on developing measures. And it's now at this September meeting that the council is selecting measures to include in Framework 51. After today's meeting, we'll kick off a NEPA analysis. And then at the November meeting, we anticipate that you would take final action on Framework 51. So just to show you what is an overview of what is currently under consideration in Framework 51, there are a number of issues in the gray box that are under a regulatory requirement. This includes revising the Gulf of Maine Cod Rebuilding Plan, revising the American Place Rebuilding Plan, specifications for White Hake, U.S. and Canada TACs for the three transboundary stocks, Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder, Eastern Georges Bank Cod, and Eastern Georges Bank Haddock. There are some additional issues that the Groundfish Oversight Committee was considering. They currently include the Regional Administrator's Authority for In-Season U.S.-Canada Adjustment, disapproved reporting and monitoring issues from Framework 48, and more specifically, that's the Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder discard strata, carryover, small mesh fishery AMs for Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder sub-ACL, and revising halibut and wolffish AMs. There were two additional issues that were removed at the last meeting, and I'll walk through that in just a moment. Those include haddock spillover and full retention. I also want to note that carryover and halibut wolffish AMs were both flagged as pending council discussion today. So there will be some additional information that's been provided by NIMS on these two issues, and the committee decided that it would be best for the full council to decide whether or not these should be included in Framework 51 or not. So those are marked pending. And just briefly on these two pending issues, as far as carryover is concerned, NERA has provided an overview of the clarification of carryover, and you should have a letter in your correspondence pertaining to this. And the council may wish to consider if additional clarification is deemed necessary in Framework 51 based on the information provided. Commercial fishery AMs, those may be revised for Atlantic halibut and wolffish. And the Groundfish Oversight Committee last week requested a report on if AMs had been triggered or not for fishing year 2012. And the Oversight Committee also expressed interest in options that were different than closures, something along the lines of allocation if there was going to be any type of revision. And that information, I believe, will be provided today. There were two other additional items that were removed at the most recent meeting. These include haddock spillover and full retention. Haddock spillover was removed because based on the PDT and SSC findings that did not show evidence of haddock spillover in such a way that you could assign one stock to another stock, the Groundfish Oversight Committee then removed this section. But the Groundfish Oversight Committee did discuss Gulf of Maine haddock stock and that perhaps the 2010 year class has not been fully captured in the recent assessment. This led to a motion by the committee to ask the council to ask the SSC to reconsider the ABC of Gulf of Maine haddock. Full retention was added into Framework 51 at an earlier meeting in the summer, at the August meeting. It was lowest on the priority list, but it was still important to the Groundfish Oversight Committee. One of the key points the committee discussed was that a monitoring system really needed to be in place to fully implement any kind of full retention system. And because of this, the committee decided to move full retention to the draft list of calendar year 2014 groundfish priorities. And the motion was to move that we remove option 2, full retention, from consideration at this time, but to be included in the next available groundfish action. So now I'm moving on into what is currently included in Framework 51. This includes all four topics that you see, and I'll walk through these one by one. If you're following along in the number six document, we're starting on page 2. So the current options under the Gulf of Maine Cod Rebuilding Plan, there are two options, with the second option having three sub-options. The first option is no action. The second is a revised rebuilding strategy. Under sub-option A, the revised rebuilding strategy would be to rebuild the stock with a medium probability of success by 2022, an 8-year plan. Sub-option B would also have a medium probability of success by 2024, a 10-year plan. And sub-option C was added at the recent committee meeting, and it's similar to B, but it would also add the provision that if during the first 8 years, F rebuild is less than 75% FMSY, FMSY will still apply if the stock ACL based upon 75% FMSY has never been exceeded during the rebuilding plan. This motion was subject of quite a good discussion at the Oversight Committee, but there was concern as to whether it was legal or not, and we were hoping today that we would have some advice on whether this is an option that is legal or not, or could be changed in some way. Similar to Gulf of Maine Cod, we also developed rebuilding plans for American Place. Again, several options, very similar to the first. Option one of no action, option two of revising the rebuilding strategy. Under option A, the rebuilding strategy would be to rebuild the stock with a medium probability of success by 2021, which is a 7-year plan. Under B, it would be an 8-year plan, and C, a 10-year plan. Again, the committee also added in sub-option D of an additional option that took an approach similar to the previous approach for COD. The rationale for why the committee was looking at both these strategies for COD and American Place under sub-option C and D, respectively, was because there was some concern about some of the recent assessment for both stocks, in particular for Gulf of Maine Cod, what actually natural mortality may or may not be, and whether or not natural mortality has been increasing. And because of this, I believe the rationale was based on keeping F low and at a reasonably low number, but would still recognize that natural mortality might be high for the Gulf of Maine stock. A similar rationale was made for American Place, that if F was kept low, it would still allow the stock to have some rebuilding. So moving right along into annual catch limits, under option one would be no action, and option two is annual specifications for fishing year 2014 through 2015 for the four stocks listed. And you'll note in your in the document number six, there are several tables, and all those tables do not have these values inserted yet because they were pending a number of things. They were pending the outcome of TMGC discussions and discussions here today, and also pending SSC reports, and we did not have those in time for preparation of the documents for the committee. So with regards to White Hake, yesterday you heard the report from the SSC on White Hake, and here again I provided the ABCs and the OFLs that the SSC adopted. The committee also made a motion to support the ABCs for White Hake as set by the SSC for 2014 through 2016. So now I'm on page 13 of the draft document, if you're following along with that document. And what's remaining from what was in the full document are these three issues: small mesh fishery measures, management measures for U.S. and Canada TACs, and Georges Bank yellowtail flounder management measures. So under the small mesh fishery measures, option one is no action, and option two, an AM for the small mesh fishery for Georges Bank yellowtail flounder sub-ACL. Framework 48 established the sub-ACL, but it did not have an AM with it, so that was supposed to be established in the next action, which would be Framework 51. We did not have, the PDT was not able to provide what these small mesh fishery measures might look like, but we did have report from the joint squid, mackerel, butterfish, part of their AP from the MID with our whiting AP, and they sat down and talked about a number of different options. You'll note in your binder that you have a summary of all of that work, and Andy is here today if you have any specific questions about that. Based on the report provided, the committee then developed several options. These are still in draft form, and they're still in the form of motions. But there would be a sub-option A to include an alternative for a pound-for-pound payback into the small mesh fishery plan if they exceed their sub-ACL of Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder. Another option would be an area would close when the sub-ACL is exceeded. And I'll get to that one in just a moment. And an additional one as a possible AM for a gear modification in the small mesh fishery Georges Bank area. In particular, this section needs some additional discussion on fleshing out these alternatives and what they may look like. We also received some tasking at the last meeting, and this tasking was specific to refining what this area could look like for an AM, and also to thinking about how there could be a information system used for the small mesh fisheries to request an observer prior to leaving the dock for a trip. So under management measures for U.S. and Canada TACs, currently there, in the document that you have, there are three options: option one of no action, option two of a revised in-season adjustment for U.S. and Canada TACs. Under that option, the regional administrator would be allowed to adjust the U.S.-Canada quotas during the fishing year after the allocations were made. An additional quota would be allocated consistent with the current ABC distribution. The regional administrator would not have the authority to change the allocations to the sub-ACLs during the fishing year. Under option three, the revised in-season adjustment for U.S.-Canada TACs, if this option was adopted, the RA would be allowed to adjust the U.S.-Canada quotas during the fishing year after the allocations were made, but additional quota would be distributed consistent with the sector sub-ACL distribution. The committee then discussed some other process-related issues around quota trading, and both the GAAP and the committee wanted to make sure that the industry was able to weigh in on any trade in some way. So that was the motivation behind option number four, which giving the RA authority to make a transboundary quota trades either way, with or only with the entities that will be trading their quota. There was also discussion about whoever gives the quota should also benefit. And so this is incorporated in the second part of the motion, which is whatever entities provide the quota for the transboundary trading should benefit from the quota given and trade from Canada. There was also some discussion at the committee level on whether or not this specific option makes more sense in an amendment as opposed to a framework, and we were hoping for additional clarification on that today as well. At the last committee meeting last week, we also discussed Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder management measures, and under those are two options we have right now, one of no action, and the second was to revisit the stratification of assumed discards for Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder. This was an issue that was an item that was disapproved in Framework 48. It incorporated counting discards in a different way, a different stratification than had previously been done, and there were some issues about from some members of industry that it would not work for them. So the PDT has been asked to revisit this stratification. We haven't had a chance to do that specifically, but we will have our meeting on October 7th, and this is one of the issues that we'll be discussing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie. Questions for Jamie? For Mike?
On this last item, revisit the stratification of assumed discards of Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder. Is this a management issue in terms of how the discards are counted, or is this an issue of estimation of the amount of discards? I apologize for not being familiar with the issue, but I'm trying to determine whether it's really management or science that's being revisited here.
Give me 1 second. I want to pull up another figure. More specifically, it was an area of 522 was going to be separated out from the rest of Georges Bank, and because that area specifically versus the other areas of Georges Bank had different rates of discards, that one approach would be to aggregate the discards that were of a similar rate into that stratification. So it was more on how the reporting was occurring and how that rate was being applied to the fishery, and less of a concern about the scientific aspects.
Other questions from the council? You had a question, Tom?
I did. I had a question about the alternative which would allow the RA to adjust the U.S.-Canada quota. Is that unlimited authority to adjust it for whatever reason, or is the intent to provide specific authority so that he could make an adjustment in order to facilitate a quota trade?
So what we've been discussing has been limited authority and not a catch-all authority in that context. I'm not sure if that was fully captured here or not.
I think the committee motion will reflect Jamie's comment there. Other questions? Any questions from the audience? Tom.
Great. Karen, we're going to go through a suite of 13 committee motions associated with the framework, and then most likely take a break, and then dive right into the amendment. So we have a number of motions here, and this is the first. So I move on behalf of the committee to add a sub-option C with the following text. If during the first 8 years, EFRI build is less than 75% FMSY, 75% FMSY will still apply if the stock ACL based upon 75% FMSY has never been exceeded during the rebuilding plan to section 4.1.1, revised GOMCOD rebuilding strategy. This motion passed the committee 401.
Committee motion, which doesn't need a second. Council comments. Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps I could ask Mitch to weigh in on the legality of the issue. I think that will help us make some decisions about this. How does this mesh with the law?
Yeah, we've looked at this, and it doesn't appear that we could approve this because of the mandatory language in there that does not allow the mortality to be adjusted to ensure that the rebuilding would be accomplished within the time period required by the law. So we have serious doubts about this.
Other council questions or comments out to the audience? Back to the council. Tom.
Yeah, I have to admit I wasn't actually at this meeting in person, so this is somewhat new to me, and I think I share Mitch's perspective on whether it actually has the potential to be approved, and if it doesn't have that potential, I really don't think we should waste a tremendous amount of staff resources or any of our time considering it. So I guess my question, perhaps even to our executive director with long history in this FMP, has anything like this been approved in the past or considered and ultimately disapproved?
I was trying to think about this a little bit. So basically, this is saying that we have a fixed EPRI build which continues for a given period, irrespective of what happens. We had a during that period. The difference, I think, is that we adopted a similar adaptive strategy in Amendment 13, sort of, where for the first few years of the FMP that we were going to fish at FMSY. And if you go back and look in Amendment 13, it actually says that you would fish at FMSY until, I think, 2008, and then you would adjust accordingly to rebuild by 2014. I think that's the closest that was approved by the agency. The difference here with that is that it was clear in that particular rebuilding plan that based on where you were in the rebuilding program in 2008, the fishing mortality would be adjusted from then on. Whereas it appears in this one that there's no adjustment made to the rebuilding F as you go forward, regardless of your progress on the rebuilding program. It's kind of a long-winded answer to tell you I don't believe we've ever submitted anything exactly like this and that has been approved.
Jackie.
I'll squat. Thanks. So the groundfish advisors had a long discussion about the revised rebuilding schedules for Gulf Maine Cod as well as for American Place, and a long discussion about the PDT report that came out to accompany this and the recommendations and the options that are placed in there. Two points that are made. First, you know, it's important for Gulf Maine Cod for the council to realize that the MRAMP projection assumes a lot of these rebuilding plans assume that natural mortality is going to go back to 0.2. Even though we assume that natural mortality is 0.4, we don't have reference points associated with the 0.4. But the rebuilding plan that you're being asked to adopt is only successful if natural mortality goes back to 0.2, even though we think it might be 0.4 right now. So there's a lot of... The groundfish advisors had a lot of discussion about what is natural mortality now, what are these rebuilding plans that we're now being asked to support, and the groundfish advisors had a very lengthy discussion about rebuilding plans in general, the fishery disaster we're under now, the last 10 years of rebuilding of Gulf of Maine cod, and the recommendation was that something be done when considering additional rebuilding programs for these stocks, rather than just adopting a new rebuilding schedule, that we do it with more thought and more care, and also with inconsistencies in the PDT report, there was concern about that. So the recommendation for FMSY is, right now some of the rebuilding plans that are established in here actually recommend an F rebuild, which is actually larger than FMSY, and the recommendation from the groundfish advisors was to go with something lower, which is 75% FMSY, and to hold it at that, and then see how that evolves over time. So, the groundfish advisors had a very lengthy discussion about the PDT report, the rebuilding plan, natural mortality, and the need to be maybe go with something more conservative up front for a consistent time frame to see how the stock responds. So that's my quick response to this discussion, and that's where this motion actually started to come into play. Thanks.
Is there anyone else from the audience who'd like to speak before I go back to council? George.
Yeah, I'd just like to support Mitch's opinion here that this I don't think would be approvable. I think you're making an assumption now as to what's going to happen throughout the rebuilding period, and that may likely not be the case. I think the appropriate way to approach this is to monitor the stock through the rebuilding period, and if it's not responding the way you expect it will, and it's clear that it's not going to make its rebuilding target, then you need to adjust the F appropriately to do everything you can to try to reach that target. If you do that and you get to the end of the rebuilding period and it didn't work out, which has happened a couple of times, then you go into a different scenario. But I don't think you start the process with the assumption that you're just going to let it ride and do nothing in the interim.
Mike?
Yeah, I think the National Standard 1 guidelines are pretty clear on the situation, as more or less as George has just described it, and so I would be surprised if this was approvable as well. I'm actually not even clear what it really means. It's pretty clear that you could have an F rebuild that's less than FMSY and go through the first 8 years and have an F that actually turned out to be less than F rebuild. I'm not sure what it means to say that 75% FMSY will still apply. That sounds like it's saying that you would then increase your F to 75% FMSY, even if you had been working with a level that was lower than that in the context of F rebuild, which doesn't seem logical to me, so I would not be able to support this either. I did want to briefly respond to a comment that Jackie made about the COD rebuilding situation and the concern about the M used in the model, or the natural mortality, relative to the reference points. So while I don't support this motion, I do share the concern that she expressed about the consistency between the model used in the assessment and the reference points used for the rebuilding plan. So I'll just make that known that that is a concern I will have when this comes forward, if that inconsistency exists. Thank you.
David.
I understand the service of concerns about the motion. National standard guidelines are clear. Of course, the guidelines are being revised, and I'm hopeful that the guidelines will eventually be revised in a way that make them more useful, more pragmatic, and maybe even consistent with the recommendations that are coming out of the National Academy of Science, out of the Research Council regarding rebuilding and mortality and biomass targets. That's all unfinished business, of course, but it still is out there. I support the motion largely because I'm influenced by the assessment, the Gulf of Maine COD assessment, and Mike just referenced an important point, and that is right now all we have before us regarding Gulf of Maine COD and rebuilding stock status involves our having an assumption that natural mortality is now, I think, 0.8, and we assume it's going to drop down to 0.2. If it doesn't drop down to 0.2, although it's assumed it will, I don't believe that, but it's assumed that it will. If it doesn't drop back down, then rebuilding is impossible. I think that was the conclusion that was drawn. We cannot reach our rebuilding target if that mortality does not drop down. So this motion, in part, reflects an understanding of that particular conclusion by the assessment, that if mortality stays high, natural mortality, and it likely will, we're not going to be able to rebuild. In that case, it's likely that we'll find ourselves in the near future perhaps being faced with the need to cut fishing mortality down to even lower levels that will result in a worse situation than we have right now for Gulf of Maine cod in terms of the ACLs. So this motion reflects that logic. And frankly, it's a rather conservative approach because you have to be below the ACL. The FMSY will still apply if the stock ACL based upon 75% FMSY has never been exceeded during the rebuilding plan. So if it's exceeded once, then this would not apply. So this, again, it relates to the natural mortality, the uncertainty in the assessment, and the fact that we do have a groundfish fisheries failure right now. Why in the world would we want to impose more undue restrictions on this fishery and potentially shut down the Gulf of Maine groundfish fishery, never mind for codfish, because of what happens with Gulf of Maine cod? So I think it makes sense. I realize that there are problems with it from the National Marine Fisheries Service perspective, but the groundfish advisors offered it up. I felt it had a great deal of merit. We continue to fall short of the ACLs. We're not taking the ACLs. Therefore, this seems to be more of a conservative approach than at first it would seem.
Mark?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can't support the motion. We've had a lot of instability in, obviously, in the cardstock assessments, and our perceptions have changed on short notice. And given our poor performance in achieving realized Fs with prescribed ACLs, I'm just not seeing the logic here. Like Dr. Sisselwine, it seems to imply to me that fishing mortality rate could be higher than the rebuilding fishing mortality rate. And in the context of increased natural mortality rate, I just don't understand the logic of it. So I can't support the motion at this point.
Jamie?
Just a point of clarification. We're referring here to the Gulf of Maine codstock. The Georges Bank codstock is the one that has that 0.8 natural mortality on the older age classes and the later portions of the time series. For the Gulf of Maine codstock, there were two assessments, one that used a natural mortality set of 0.2 and then the MRAMP model that had a varying natural mortality. So I just wanted to clarify that here.
Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to agree with Mark. I can't support this. I understand the ambiguity about our estimated natural mortality rates, but right now we've got an ecosystem that is responding to a whole slew of things that are beyond our control. And I don't think it's this council's purview to put in management measures that second-guess the science. I don't think that's our place. I would support a motion that would ask the SSC if they could reinvestigate more intensely the assumed more natural mortality of this stock, but I can't support this measure right now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Jim.
Well, I just wanted to put things in a little bit of perspective before we get too caught up in what the natural mortality rate is. In the two models that were put forward that were reviewed and accepted, one is the M.2 and the other is called the MRAMP model. Regardless of which one you use, you get very similar results about the status of the stock. In one case, it's about 13% of the rebuilt level, and in the other case, it's about 18%. So regardless of which model you use, you're very far from being rebuilt. So I think spending a lot of time talking about what you're going to do 8 years from now, you may want to revisit that in 5 or 6 years. But regardless of which of the models you use, there's a long way to go to get rebuilt.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those who are opposed. Okay, motion fails 2-13. 0. Tom?
Thanks. The following motion is, I think, following a similar discussion at the committee level, and that's motion 2, to add suboption D to section 4.1.2, revised American Place rebuilding strategy, with the following text: if during the first 8 years F rebuild is less than 75% FMSY, 75% FMSY will still apply if the stock ACL based upon 75% FMSY has never been exceeded during the rebuilding plan.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Given our previous discussion on COD, is there a need for further discussion on this motion? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those who are opposed. The motion fails 2-13-0. Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Moving along to committee motion number 3, move on behalf of the committee to include an alternative for a pound-for-pound payback in the small mesh fishery plan if they exceed their sub-ACL of Georges Bank yellowtail flounder. That motion passed the committee 5-0-0.
Committee motion does not require a second. Council comments. Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And before I speak to the motion, if I could just step back generally and offer a couple of remarks about the approach to the small mesh measures. Obviously, this will affect the Lalago fishery, which is in our squid mackerel butterfish plan. A lot of this will also affect the whiting fishery. A number of whiting boats, as you know, are home ported in the mid-Atlantic. And there are a number of concerns relative to this approach. You know, I think ultimately the most effective approach we can take to managing yellowtail interactions in these fisheries is going to be through gear modifications and also an industry avoidance program. Having said that, I'm also concerned about the consistency with which we might apply AMs in this fishery relative to other council-managed species. And it appears that some of the AMs that were developed in the groundfish committee meeting might be a little bit different than some of the AMs that we've applied in other fisheries. And this is one of those. So this would invoke a full payback pound for pound if that sub-ACL is exceeded. In some of our other FMPs, for example, the scallop fishery, where we do have consideration of sub-ACLs, I believe some of those reactive AMs are only invoked if the sub-ACL is exceeded by 50%. And in other fisheries, we have reactive AMs that kick in only if the total ACL is exceeded, because in that case, there's obviously biological harm potentially. So I think those are questions we need to work through. And I am concerned primarily about the consistency relative to this. So I would suggest that if you go down the road of a payback, that you also consider another sub-option that would allow for a payback in the event that the total ACL is exceeded or some more significant multiple of the sub-ACL, again, in the interest of trying to maintain some consistency. And then, beyond that, it appears that there were a couple of taskings of the PDT. One of those would analyze and refine observer call-in requirements. The Lalago fishery is already subject to an observer call-in requirement. They have a 48-hour requirement on that. I don't see a problem with that. The whiting fishery doesn't have one at this point, but I don't think that's particularly overly onerous. But the other tasking of the PDT was to develop an AM for the small mesh fishery that would be an area and seasonal closure prohibiting small mesh fishery in two of the key areas. And I think if that's going to be considered as a proactive AM, that strikes me as a pretty harsh approach to that. I think, if we can go in the direction of gear modifications in a proactive sense and try to move forward with developing gears that can be approved for use within the Georges Bank yellowtail stock area for the small mesh fisheries, that would be the best proactive approach. But then just ensuring that whatever reactive AMs are in place are essentially fair and consistent with some of the other ones in our other fisheries.
Terry.
So I'm glad Rick's here because we didn't have the answers to these questions the other day when we were talking about it. So is there something for gear modification that you guys use now? Because we had no idea the other day at the committee meeting. Can you use the raised foot rope trawl and all that stuff? Just kind of curious what you've done down there.
Thanks, Terry. And those aren't in place now by regulation in the SMB plan, but there have been a number of research projects that looked at the effectiveness of raised foot rope trawls. There have also been some research, I believe, on large mesh belly panels in the nets. And so the advisors suggested that there were several types of gear modifications that might be effective at eliminating flatfish interactions in this fishery. And they included a modified rule trawl. They included a raised foot rope trawl. They included a large mesh belly panel net. It seems that all of those could potentially be remedies for this. They're not in the SMB plan right now by regulation, but some research papers were submitted, I believe, after the AP meeting to the staff, and those included the work of Emerson Hasbrook at Cornell, among others.
Follow up?
Yeah, we, in the shrimp fishery, we used to have a large mesh panel behind the sweep. And it worked great for getting rid of flounders. And then the Northern Mud Great came in, we took that out, and I thought, it was kind of dumb, I thought, because it got rid of a lot of small flounders. So, you know, I know that there's lots of things we can do for gear modification. It's just we didn't know what was approved, what the approval process was, so we were just trying to come up with some kind of measure, the options for measures at that point. So.
Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last Friday at committee, we had the discussion about the inconsistencies on which the AM would be triggered. And because of this, I'd like to read a consensus statement from the committee. And it says, the committee agreed by consensus that the pound-for-pound payback AM for small mesh fishery on Georgia's Bank Yellowtail Flounder Sub ACL would only be triggered if the entire ACL is to be exceeded to be consistent with other AMs. And also, Terry, if I may, under the Whiting report, there is a list from the Whiting AP, Squid AP, on some of the potential gears that have already been approved on Georgia's Bank for, the haddock fishery and other things. So you might want to refer to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Tom.
Thanks. And I have no problem, with the language with regards to ensuring that an AM is only triggered if the overall ACL is exceeded. I think that makes sense. I will reinforce, though, that we have proactive AMs on the directed groundfish side of this, and we do have a pound-for-pound payback, and it's immediate, and we get shut out of areas when we're out of quota. So there is already an inconsistency with how we're managing some of these sub-ACLs and the associated AMs. And I think it's important to keep that front and center in our mind, how the directed groundfish fishery is adhering to proactive AMs and pound-for-pound payback. It may or may not be important to have that consistency across to some of the bycatch sub-ACLs, but it's important for us to keep in mind. With regards to the gear modifications as possible solutions, I think everybody would jump at that. I'm not sure in terms of providing our PDT with the research and the information to actually analyze the impacts of a gear-based AM, we're going to need a significant amount of information about the yellowtail bycatch in those different gears, and we're going to need more information than I think we have in front of us today to develop those alternatives. And I'm looking at Jamie. Maybe we're at a different stage, but as I see it, I mean, those are to approve them as AMs. We're going to have a significant volume of evidence that they actually diminish yellowtail flounder bycatch, and I'm not sure. And they're feasible for the fishery. And I'm not sure we have that in front of us. That's not to say that we couldn't transition to that kind of approach later on. But I just maybe we're at a different stage in our understanding of those gears and their impacts. And so I guess I'd look to Jamie, and it looks like Tom has a comment as well.
Jamie?
I'm going to pass it to Andy.
Andy?
I have no one left to pass it to. Dave? The advisors discussed this issue. We were advised by the fishery service that the earliest proactive AMs could be implemented would be May 1, 2015 for overages in the 2013 fishing year. The overages wouldn't be determined until after the end of the fishing year, and then it'd take time to propose a rule and require gear. In that time, the advisors and the various research people that were at the AP meeting felt very confident that the gears that were already under evaluation could be evaluated in the right place in the right time in the whiting fishery to certify that they would meet certain standards and for yellowtail bycatch reduction. At the time, we weren't sure what that certification process would be. One template that could be used, we looked in our SOPs and in a previous framework adjustment. There's a gear-based certification process, was it term certification for the B-Day at Sea program that might be used as a template. It hadn't worked very well to date, but it might be used as a template in this case. I'll answer any questions, further questions you might have.
I guess I just have one follow-up. Sorry. The way I see it, if we have a pound-for-pound payback there's absolutely nothing keeping the whiting boats or whiting fishery from using gear that's not going to trigger an AM and stay within the ACL. I mean, in my experience, this council, we can get ourselves wrapped up trying to, you know, get into gear restrictions and alignment and net configurations. If we have a pound-for-pound payback with an associated sub-ACL, all of these gear changes could be made, and the fishery could just operate within that sub-ACL. I think that's perhaps another approach and sometimes allows for flexibility, more flexibility for the fishery in terms of innovating even better approaches to avoiding constraining stocks.
Terry.
I just think that we need to push the industry to take the incentive to eliminate yellowtail bycatches as best they can, because, I mean, if they don't have any accountability, it's all going to go on a different group. Why would they do it? Why wouldn't they try to maximize their catch? And, you know, so, I mean, I'm not against, you know, moving it to only if the entire ACL is caught, and then that would kick in their accountability measures. But I certainly think we need to give them an incentive to do it somehow, some way.
Tom?
I just wanted to follow up on Andy's comment about the measures that are in place in the groundfish plan now for certifying gear for special access programs in the category B day and C program. I'm not sure if the standard that's in there really translates well to this particular fishery. It might. But the one thing I would caution people is that the review process does take a little bit of time. So if the council does move that way, the people doing the gear experiments need to recognize that they can't expect to walk in with a document, you know, a month before the end of the fishing year and have that gear approved. It requires meeting with our research steering committee, and then it requires some follow-on review by the groundfish committee and the agency before the provisions actually get implemented. So I'm not saying it would be impossible. I think it would actually be very possible, like Andy says. I just want to make sure people understand that there is a little bit of time it takes to get an experiment moved through that process.
Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris Brown, Rhode Island Commercial Fishermen Association. I don't know where to start. I guess I'll start by saying I came before this council 6-7 years ago, and I discussed small mesh discards of flounders, and I was told they didn't exist. At the time, flounders were relatively abundant. Yellowtails were relatively abundant. And Pat Kirkle specifically told me to sit down and shut up. So I did for about 5 minutes. Then I kept coming back, and I've been before this council 8 or 10 times in the last 5 years and spoke of small mesh discards of flounder and yellowtail. In the meantime, we've developed nets that do not catch them. And I do not understand the institutional reluctance of this group to simply wave these nets in with a checkered flag and then manage the outcome by the means that Tom suggested. We have nets with raised drop, longer drop chains the flounders pass under. Like Terry mentioned, we tow nets with 32-inch mesh in the very front of the foot rope, and I defy you to catch flounders with those. You have to do everything you can do to not hurt this industry by closing these areas that will produce discards if we don't change. Manage the outcome. Hold the industry accountable. I implore you to do that. That is responsible management. We're not asking you to lower the bar, but don't make it impossible for us to get these nets on the ground and to pursue the fisheries. We have to keep going. The small mesh fishery on George's Bank is going to economically dwarf the large mesh fishery on George's Bank if we keep going down the same road we're going down. We can be surgically precise. We can do a good job. I would also like to see the anatomy of the determination that made the claim that there are yellowtail discards currently. We can't find yellowtails, and all of a sudden, there's a problem in the small mesh fishery. It seems, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but it seems like, you know, we're going down the road to closing areas as a solution to everything, and I don't think that's the way to go. I think we have to get these gears approved. So work with us. I mean, my God, we can't take many more hits. We can't afford to lose a squid fishery. We can't afford to lose a whiting fishery. There may be more small mesh value on Georgia's Bank than large mesh in the next 10 years. I don't know. It's scary. We don't know where we're going. But we need as much help as we can get. We don't need difficult time frames. You know, we support accountability, but we need the flexibility to get these in. And you guys have to take some bold steps. You don't have to approve a net based on flounders, sand dabs, yellowtails, fluke, everything, gray sole. It's flatfish. Don't make us spend the money. Money is not available to prove these things species-specific. We can make improvements in the gears based on, you know, is it a flatfish? Yes, then we can avoid flatfish. We've done it with fluke, flounders, yellowtails. We don't have the money to do it with every species one at a time. Please accept the findings as being interchangeable. You know, you can't be closing down the areas for small mesh discards. You know, you can't close these areas down because of discards, rather. It's the same logic that would have, you know, take marvel at the fact that large rivers happen to flow by big cities. You know, you're going to have discards if you don't modify the gear. Let's get the gear modified. Don't close the areas. Thank you.
Dan.
Montauk, New York. I'd like to reiterate everything that Chris Brown said and Rick Robbins said, and they had a couple more comments. I own a 95-footer that we base in New Bedford. I employ 10 people on the boat. Almost all of them are displaced ground fishermen. I want everybody to keep that in mind, too. The whiting fishery itself is one of the more underutilized species managed by this council. Not only are we talking about regulating existing fishermen right now, but we're regulating the option or potential for other fishermen to get into this fishery. It's still an open access fishery. We all know that. So it's not just the present fishermen we're going to regulate here today. If we go down the road of closing these areas, we're going to take that potential from any other fishermen in New England, for that matter. We use what we call a rope net, currently referred to up here as a rule trawl on cultivator. We voluntarily prefer the fish cleaner. It costs more money to do so. And a lot of people that do this full time would do that. You develop a net that works for you. We're talking about a somewhat high volume fishery. You want to get your fish on as quick as you can, and they're not a high price fish, so you want to go in and out and the cleaner you can make your toes, the better, obviously, and it's better for the whole industry to eliminate bycatch. The problem with having to voluntarily do this, we have people trying to get into the small mesh fishery. They don't have the money for a rule trawl or a rope net or a raised foot rope or whatever. They come in there with the standard whiting net, and then you are going to have discards. In my mind, it should be mandatory to have to use these bycatch avoidance gears. And I agree with Chris wholeheartedly. A flounder is a flounder. They react the same. And we can shed just about all flatfish and skates, for that matter, on cultivator by using a rule trawl. I just am asking this council, please, don't force these closed areas on us. Give us a chance to use gear we have already developed. And I think everybody should have to use them in both of these areas, northern and southern flank of Georgia's, just to keep the fishery open and keep the potential for new fishermen to have access to it. As far as the observer coverage, I don't know. I have a question. Is there a lack of coverage in the whiting fishery now? I know the squid fishery, is, you had to call in, there's plenty of coverage. But every time we get a phone call from the Observer Company when they need coverage, is there a lack of coverage in the whiting fishery now?
I don't think we can answer that question right now.
I don't think there is. I mean, every time they call, we give them coverage. I don't know if there's a need for a call-in system. Is what I'm getting at. It is going to be a burden on the whiting fleet in the summer when we're doing faster turnarounds. If there's no need for more coverage, then I don't know what we're trying to do here. The future, there's a sub-ACL pound-for-pound payback. I agree with Mr. Robbins. You know, if we can eliminate all our bycatch, there's going to be more yellowtail. Our sub-ACL is going to be up for grabs to cover the groundfish fleet or the scallop fleet, in my mind, and that's what we're trying to do here. We're going to try and eliminate our bycatch. In my mind, then, if our sub-ACL isn't used, it's going to go over to somebody else if they have overages, and rightfully it should go the other way. If the whole ACL isn't exceeded, then the sub-ACL or the groundfish ACL shouldn't have to do a pound-for-pound payback up to that point. And once again, the closed areas. I hate to put the closed areas in front of the gear, the bycatch avoidance gears. The number one priority here in this industry and at this council level is to keep fishermen fishing, not to keep them not fishing. If we close down a cultivator in the summer, you're displacing a whole fleet of whiting boats. And up north, on the southern flank of Georgia's in the winter, you're going to shut down the offshore squid and whiting fishery in both places. Thank you for your time.
Bonnie.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Bonnie Brady, Long Island Commercial Fishing Association. I'm probably going to reiterate a lot of the stuff that's already been said, so I'll try to say it quickly. You all remember about 2-3 years ago when the drop chain was trying to be put on the winter flounder fishery, and I asked, there was no science at that time to take care of it, and I had asked, please, to give us the time to do so. And Chris, wherever you are, you remember these conversations that he and I had together. And you all gave us the time to do so. And the result of that is the Commercial Fisheries Research Foundation and Cornell document where they're doing both the large mesh belly panel and the drop chain with very good results for both for winter flounder. So obviously it's an example of science working with fishermen to get the job done. From between 2009 and 2012, the squid fishery in the Atlantic states was a $90 million industry. From what I could find just quickly, Atlantic hake 2010 to 2012, a $32 million history, so $120 million over the last 3 years. Obviously, everyone up here is suffering greatly, and the ability to allow them to be able to, 1 or 2 months out of the year, have the opportunity to pay the mortgage and make things easier in a dire situation. I don't see that as something that should be closed down immediately when there are gear modifications that can work, and that's a really important thing. The thing that I think we talked about with some people on a conference call last week is the ability of nymphs and, Tom, what you had discussed, to be able to spin it around so that if we know the flatfish that's going to work. Right now they've got the winter flounder large mesh belly panel study. They have some preliminary data on yellow-tailed flounders. However, they don't have the time right now to be able to do the trials. They're planning on doing so. I spoke with Cornell, I think it was, when was it, Dan, last Monday? And they're ready to do what they can to turn the trial around and work on yellow-tailed flounder. What we need from, whether it's the council, whether it's NIMS, is the ability to be able to surgically go in there and say, okay, we need to eliminate this bycatch. We think this can work. Let the fishermen, who obviously know what they're talking about when it comes to gear, put the best heads at it and be able to spin it around quick enough so that the council can accept it and NIMS can then accept it. So I'm not going to keep talking because I think I'm saying pretty much the same thing. We need to have a mechanism to allow industry to work quickly to solve a problem before it becomes dire and we all suffer as a result. Thank you.
Dave?
David Gaethel, Fishing Vessel in Diane Hampton, New Hampshire. I do not fish on cultivator, but I do have 30 years' experience in the whiting fishery, and I wanted to speak to two things. The first is I think this motion should be amended to say that the total ACL is exceeded for Georgia's Bank Yellowtail. That would make it consistent with some of the other plans, as Rick Robbins and others have pointed out. The second thing I wanted to speak to, because I'm not sure where it's going to actually appear in the document I have back there, there was a motion that appears to have been skipped over, and that's the observer coverage motion. And I want to explain why the whiting fishery is not the groundfish fishery, and it can't be treated the same way. Whiting fishery is a fishery where you have to have a buyer for the fish before you leave, or there's no sense in leaving. If you think you can go out and bring in a boatload of whiting and bring them to an auction somewhere and sell them, you're sadly mistaken. The result is that you can't give 48 hours notice most of the time because you don't know when you're going to go. We had an extended set to with the observer program this summer over the smallmouth fishery off New Hampshire because we are notified sometime between 9 and 11 at night whether or not we can fish the next day. In other words, whether they'll buy the fish. And, of course, the observers would call in the afternoon, are you going fishing tomorrow? I don't know. Well, why don't you know? Because I don't know if they'll buy the fish. Well, when will you know? 3:30 tomorrow morning. Well, that's too late. We can't be there. I go, well, then send somebody down and have them sit on the dock at 4:30. If a red truck pulls in, the boat's leaving. Red truck doesn't pull in, we didn't get an order, boat's not going. So if you put in a situation where people have to give 48 hours notice, one of two things is going to happen. They're going to give 7 days a week notice that they're leaving 48 hours in advance, and you're going to deploy observers all over the planet for boats that aren't leaving, or you're going to shut the fishery down. Those are the two choices. It's that simple. So that idea of having to give 48 hours notice for an observer for the whiting fishery will never work, unless you want to spend exorbitant sums of money on phantom trips. So I did want to speak to that. And the third thing is I want to back up the other people. Gears already exist to eliminate flounders. I've used a raised foot rope trawl for years. We eliminate yellowtails, blackbacks, dabs, gray sole, windowpane, skates. Last observer trip I had, as near as I could tell, it cost you somewhere on the order of $94 a pound for the regulated species I discarded for the cost of the observer. So I'd say we must be doing a pretty good job of eliminating them. And I also would like to say I wish somebody paid me $94 a pound for anything. I'd be really pleased. Which calls into question the cost of the observer program, but that's a debate for another day. So anyway, I think you need to modify this motion. I think you have to eliminate the one for the 48-hour call-in. And I think you need to task the Whiting Committee with providing you with a list of gears that could be approved for flounder elimination. That would be, as was mentioned, this rope trawl, the raised foot rope trawl, the 12-inch drop chain trawl, the big mesh panel. There's four things right there, and they all will solve your problem. And that's the way forward. Not some of the things that have been suggested. Thank you.
Ron. Jamie, well, Ron's coming up.
Just a point of clarification. The motion that was referred to about requesting an observer, that was a PDT tasking motion. On document number 16 in your packet, it's motion number 4, to task the PDT with analyzing and refining an alternative to require smallmouth fisheries in the Georgia's Bank Yellowtail stock area to request an observer prior to leaving the dock for a trip. I believe the original motion before it was amended actually said something to the extent of to require smallmouth fisheries in the Georgia's Bank Yellowtail stock area. But after some discussions at the committee level, there was concern that they weren't sure what level of coverage is in place already for the whiting and squid fisheries. So this motion was more about information gathering. I think with an eye to if there was some kind of spatial approach taken, knowing where a fisher, where the trip may be taken was important in observer coverage, but also in any kind of AM that might be in place.
Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz. Just coming up as a gear technologist, and just want to make one point. There are many gear modifications, as previous speakers have mentioned, that could reduce flatfish bycatch. What I've noticed is that these are called technical measures, and the only way they work is that you go out, you demonstrate that they work, you get the fishermen buy-in that it works, and you oppose them throughout the fleet. Time and time again, I hear that we're going to allow fishermen individually to make the right choice, and they'll comply, they'll try their best on their own to do that. That only works where you have 100% observer coverage, and we can't afford anywhere near that level of observer coverage. So I really wish that this council will go back and focus on technical measures, such as these gear measures, figure out how to get them in place as rapidly as possible, and go down that path instead of keep on revisiting this, oh, guys are going to do the right thing. We'll give them an incentive. We'll give them an individual quota. We'll give them certain poundage, and then have no observers out to sea because you can't afford it. So I just think in a broader sense, the technical measures are the solution to bycatch, and they're the solution to habitat impact. And until we start approaching it that way, as opposed to quotas and closures, we're not going to achieve fisheries management.
Jackie, and then we're going to go back to the council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jackie O'Dell, Northeast Seafood Coalition. Just a few points. I'm not going to go into a lot of the comments have already been made of what I was going to make, but I did just wanted to support some recommendations that have been discussed to modify the current motion that's on the table, that an AM would only kick in if the overall ACL was exceeded. I also strongly support the discussion regarding being proactive and taking steps to reduce bycatch rather than wait until an AM needs to go into play. There, I think we might have been in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, when Bonnie and Chris and others and the full council, I can't remember if it was a groundfish committee meeting or a council meeting, but that was probably 5 years ago, where we were discussing, at that time it was the drop chain, but there were also other gear modifications that could take place to reduce bycatch. And there have been a lot of studies, as Bonnie mentioned, there have been a lot of studies that have been done since that time that we would strongly recommend you take a close look at and require gear modifications, which would be far better than looking at either a payback or a closure of an area to allow these fisheries to continue to be prosecuted. So, and then the last question I have is really in regards to process. So we're discussing Framework 51, and the motion on the table is about AMs in Framework 51. Can Framework 51 include a gear requirement, or would that require and therefore entertain a motion from council members to look at gear requirements, or does that need to take place under a whiting regulation, or that's the next motion that's going to come up? Okay, good. Well, if I can't speak to that motion, I support that motion. All right, great. Thanks.
Tom?
The short answer is yes. We think Framework 51 could adopt a gear requirement on the small mesh fisheries in order to minimize groundfish bycatch. Framework 48 actually considered a requirement for the raised split rope trawl and the whiting, actually in the small mesh fisheries, for exactly this reason, to reduce yellowtail bycatch, but the council did not adopt that as an alternative, as a proposed action.
Andy.
There were some questions regarding the observer coverage and also our ability to detect differences in catch rates. And I wanted to put this in a little bit of context for the council. Within document 7, there's a rather extensive analysis of the observer data. I won't go through that in any detail, but just to put in context, with a standard net, Our average catch rate is about 1.5 to 2 pounds of yellowtail per 100 pounds of target species. So that if we're trying to detect a 50% or 75% reduction, we're talking about detecting a difference between 1.5 pounds and 0.3 pounds. That's where we're trying to get to. It takes a lot of data to do that. Most of the observed trips, you don't see any yellowtail until you get to the 80th or 90th percentile of the trips. That means 80 or 90% don't catch any yellowtail at all. And if you look closely at this analysis, most of the averages are driven by pretty high outliers in terms of the ratio between yellowtail and target species. You get sometimes it's not the yellowtail catch that's high, it's there wasn't very many target species in the haul. So adding observer coverage isn't necessarily the answer here. We're dealing with something that has a high variability and a very low rate, and that requires a bit of a different approach. Thank you.
George.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the timing of this a little bit. Not taking this action, but if you were to approve this, how this would work. I think we're looking – we don't get the final data for the groundfish fishing year until generally August of the year after the fishing year is finished. So there would be presumably a one-year lag in the payback provision if this were the case.
Have I got that right, Sarah?
Yes. Also, another issue, and I'm not sure whether this has been discussed before, but there is a yellowtail payback provision in the U.S.-Canada agreement that would kick in the year following the overage. So there's potentially a mismatch between how the payback for this sub-ACL would work and the U.S.-Canada payback for yellowtail flounder. You may have already talked about that, but I think it's something that you need to consider.
Laura.
I guess I'm struggling a little because we're trying to vote on the motion and people are speaking about a wide range of things. So I think it'd be helpful if when people are speaking, they're speaking to the motion at hand, because I think we're mandated to have an accountability measure. And so while things like gear modifications are great ideas, and we definitely urge the agency to move forward on them today, we're tasked with creating an accountability measure. So it would be helpful to know from industry what is an acceptable to them accountability measure that keeps people on the water but yet still holds people accountable for the catch of yellowtail. And then the other thing I just wanted to add is that, you know, I would definitely be in favor of an amendment to amend this to say only if the total ACL is exceeded, because I think that's fair. Thank you.
Just for your follow-up on your comments, Laura, the next two motions are both related to small mesh gear, and I think the depth of comments that we received during this discussion is going to be applicable for that. Definitely. Vincent, you had your hand up? Okay, PK, then Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to thank the public exactly. There's a few subsequent motions, one related to gear modifications, but it was very helpful here in the public and at the committee. We weren't sure as to what gear worked out on Cultivator Shoal and stuff, so I'm glad Dan and Chris spoke to that, because one thing we didn't want to do was shove some gear modifications down on people if they couldn't adapt in time. So, I mean, I'm against the area closures as well. But that's why we threw them in there. And to speak to what Dave said about an observer, the reason we mostly had the observer in there was to try and figure out what area they were going to fish in, not necessarily to be observed, but so we could follow through on what AM it might be for the area. But so to what Laura said, if it's okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to amend this motion on the board to say after after their sub-ACL or the total and the total ACL is exceeded.
Seconded by Vincent.
Thank you.
Discussion on the motion to amend. We've pretty well beat this one up. Okay. Those who support the motion to amend, please indicate so. Motion carries 16-0-0. Okay. Those who support the main motion as amended, please indicate so. Again, this motion carries 16-0-0. Tom.
Moving along, and we have talked about some of these motions in advance. The next committee motion is specific to area closures, and Karen can put the text on the board. It's a little confusing in terms of taking it out of the context of the committee discussion, but this motion is that the area would close when the sub-ACL is exceeded, area described in Figure 1 in the memo to the Whiting Squid AP, Document 7C, the two areas being Poly North and Poly South, and those are the shaded areas in that document. And maybe we could get the that Document 7C and actually have those areas up on the board. But again, just to remind folks, this is a committee motion, and it's one of three options that the committee outlined, and we're not taking final action today or even identifying the preferred, just creating a range of options for consideration.
Okay. As Tom says, committee motion doesn't need a second. Frank, PK, Terry.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not explicit in the motion, but I'm assuming that that would be for the following, the remaining of the fishing year, and it reopens the following fishing year because it doesn't say that in the motion. Is that the
Tom?
I deferred it to committee members' recollection of the discussion, but how we've handled AM closures after the fact is we work with staff to identify how long that closure would need to be in effect, whether it's the rest of the fishing year or some part of the following fishing year. I think some analysis in the past has demonstrated that we've effectively binned the length of those closures. If the overage is between 1 and 10%, the closure is for this long, and you know, because ultimately we have to, that AM has to pay back the overage. That's how we've handled it in other cases. But if a committee member wants to describe the conversation that I had at the last meeting.
Terry.
Well, this one here we talked about for a long time, and there are a lot of different motions up on the board, a lot of different areas, and it was very confusing with the map, so we just figured we'd put this on there and then discuss it at the full council because there was a lot of confusion on which polygon we were talking about. The maps were so big, so, you know, I mean, and I don't think anybody could figure out exactly what we were talking about closing, so we figured it would best vet it before the full council.
PK?
Yeah, I first want to let the public know that this is just for analyzing, for the PDT to analyze it as an option. I mean, I don't prefer this myself either. And my question was to Andy because, like Terry just said, I know we voted this one in, but the Poly North and the Poly South, didn't you refer to, I mean, weren't they the wrong spots? Yeah, I mean, that wasn't even the highest bycatch area or the highest catch of yellowtail. If you could elaborate on that, thank you.
Andy.
Yeah, this came out of a background document that the Fishery Service prepared, and the Poly North area is just on the northwest corner of the closed area one. The Poly South is the shaded portion along the southern flank of Georges. If you look at the map on page 23 of the backgrounder document, document seven in your binder, it says item 6C on it accurately displays where fishing occurs. Actually, it's observed hauls. It's much broader across all of the Cultivator Shoals area. The Poly South area is not bad. Okay, we're putting it up on the screen. It's north is to your left. So the Poly North and the Poly South area in that document was not accurate.
All set? Mary Beth.
So just for clarification, whether or not the area is correct or not, but the intent of this is to have a hotspot seasonal closure that would occur. Is that the general idea? And does this overlay on a pound-for-pound payback as well? And I understand these are just options in the document. I'm just trying to sort of get them straight in my mind of what the intent is here.
Terry.
Well, so we were just looking for industry feedback and council feedback on what would be an appropriate accountability measure. So we laid a lot of different options on the table, and I don't think anybody intended them to overlay on another one. It was, what do we want to do for an accountability measure? Because there were so many options there. So. What in the end, we probably only pick one of these, but whether it would be closures or gear modifications or, you know, but those were all options that were put before us, so we didn't know which one to choose because we didn't have the people in the audience to tell us what would be appropriate for the fishery at that point. And that's what I was looking for, information from the public.
Andy.
Dave Thomas and I did some analysis of the sea sampling data in preparation for the AP meeting and the Groundfish Committee meeting. As I pointed out, the catch rates are highly variable. It's difficult to distinguish a statistical difference between them because the data variability is extremely high with CVs 40% to up to 200%. And the intention of this motion, I think, was to turn that information over to the Groundfish PDT to further evaluate what might be an appropriate measure once we knew how much an overage might be and how much reduction might be needed. Jamie may have some additional things to add to it.
Jamie?
So the comment was made, I made the comment at the committee meeting that we have a October 7th meeting and that if something was going to move forward to refine the boundaries, the PDT could consider all the information that was provided to the AP at that time. And Andy has a really good document for us to review.
Mike, did you have your hand up?
Yes, I'm concerned about this option because it strikes me that it's going to demand a lot of data that's with a lot of precision that's unlikely to exist. As Andy described it, the observer information is being used to try and estimate the frequency of rare events. And that's inherently a difficult statistical problem. And when you start to then further divide it into areas and presume that you're actually going to achieve the accountability that you're looking for by defining an area and a time period that's going to be closed. I just see that we're embarking on a very difficult problem with not much time, and I don't think this is the way to address the problem.
I think the accountability measure that says if you go over, you pay back in some way is straightforward and logical. I actually have concern about that for the same reason, though, because it depends on, first, that the ACL is for the sector or segment of the fishery, sub-ACL, as it's referred to, is the right number, and we actually have issues with uncertainty in the ABC and all that sort of stuff with yellowtail. But beyond that, it also depends, again, on the estimation problem from the observer coverage, which has huge uncertainty associated with it in this small mesh fishery where you're trying to estimate something that doesn't happen very often. So I'm concerned about it even in the case of an accountability measure which pays back, but at least that's logical and straightforward. When you start to go further into trying to refine it into these sort of area closures, I think we're just getting too far out on a limb. While I have the floor on this, it actually strikes me that the direction we're not pursuing fully enough, probably can't this year, but might consider it in the future, is really to build on something that's become a very common theme in fisheries management around the world, and that is changing the burden of proof and being oriented to what's referred to as results-based management. Instead of saying, here's how you'll do it, you tell the industry, here's the outcome we want to accomplish, and you demonstrate to us how you're going to achieve that. That fits in very much with the sort of thing that Ron was talking about giving the industry the incentives to develop gear solutions to habitat problems and bycatch problems, but then to come forward with a demonstration that they actually work. And clearly you have to have an accountability where we have a process which certifies that those demonstrations are valid. I think we need to shift our focus from imposing a solution like here are the closed areas and so forth, where we probably don't have the data to achieve it, to something that is more strongly oriented towards encouraging the shift in burden of proof and results-based management. Thank you.
John, and then we're going to go out to the audience.
I think I'm wondering, based on what we heard from the audience and a little bit along the lines of what Mike said and what Ron Smallowitz said, although maybe I draw a different conclusion from what Ron Smallowitz said, whether a combination of results-oriented, we've done that, I think, with the previous motion on pound-for-pound payback, which I think is a reactive accountability measure that we need. But the audience has clearly said that gear modifications are something that many, many have already put in place. They've said it works. And what I heard Ron say is you can't just say, oh, let people do it, unless you have 100% observers, which we don't and we won't. So I'm wondering whether or not, and I think, Terry, you said this, well, we thought about this, but we didn't have the benefit that we've just had of so many people saying, you know, these raised foot ropes, the belly panels, and all of these things do work. They produce results. And proactive measures required by us are also a form of accountability measures. And so I'm wondering whether or not that form of accountability measure, a proactive accountability measure in the form of gear modifications, combined with what we just passed in terms of pound for pound, might be a direction that we might consider moving in as opposed to the closed area. So I'm not sure that's a suggestion as much as it is just thinking out loud, which, as I've said before, very dangerous, especially when I do it.
Actually, John, that will be the next committee motion. Any comments from the audience? Dan?
Quick follow-up on what Andy said. If I heard Andy right, 90% of these of the trips made in these areas, Andy, don't have any interaction with yellowtails?
This is Table 5, page 15 on the document 7. About 75% to 80% of the hauls do not observed hauls in the last 4 years. There were 401 hauls. That's about 80 trips. About 75% to 80% of the observed hauls in the Georges Bank stock area did not encounter Georges Bank yellowtail.
To follow up on that, these closed areas are going to affect 75% to, well, the percentage Andy just said of the toes that don't have any interaction at all, nothing. So what we're really trying to do here is target the 20 or 25% of the toes that do have interaction. That shouldn't be that hard of a deal. It's not like these yellowtails are spread across every toe we make. There's a handful of abnormal toes on the southern flank of Georges in the winter. And gear modifications alone would just pretty much eliminate that. There goes your abnormal toes right there. And for the other 20% up in Cultivator, once again, I mean, it's a real shame to consider closed areas when all we're talking here, we're talking 20% of these toes have interactions with flounders. Thank you.
Jackie.
Thank you. We don't support this motion. I definitely understand we participated at the Groundfish Committee and realized they were trying to create options to be analyzed for the purpose of this document, but we definitely don't feel that the closures are the best way to move forward and feel that the gear modifications, as Mr. Bullard said, gear modifications with the with a payback is definitely a better approach. And even, you know, I think later in the day when you talk about Framework 51, you're going to have a discussion about closures for other stocks such as halibut and wolffish and northern windowpane, where we're going to have issues with that as well. But I definitely think the gear modifications is a much better approach than the closures, even though we appreciate the intent of the motion to get something to be analyzed for the document. Thank you.
Any other comments from the audience? Rich?
Rich Canaster, Groundfish Advisor. It just amazes me that we're dealing with science on yellowtail that's uncertain. We'll be arguing this in a few minutes about our ACL with the U.S.-Canada sharing agreement. And it's all based on that yellowtail, and we can sit in the audience at the council and make regulations as far as closing areas for yellowtail when we don't know what the hell's going on with the yellowtail or what the size of the biomass is. I think we need a big timeout until we can get that yellowtail straightened out, because this just doesn't make sense. At least to me it doesn't. And I'll watch my mouth too, John.
Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bullard, I publicly applaud your approach, seeing how is what I said earlier. You know, manage the outcome. That's the thing. We really, the data, although it is noisy, as Mr. Applegate has suggested, there is a wide range of outcomes. It shows that there is a freedom within the industry now to fish in a wide range of ways. The guys have taken it upon themselves to do the right thing. We'll lead the way out of this problem. We have to support their direction, by making the gears that these guys are choosing to fish down there mandatory for all participants, and we will get a much improved signal from the data. Another thing that isn't being considered, we talk about natural mortality rates. At some point, we should consider that whiting are an aggressive predator, and we need to find ways to harvest them where they commingle with yellowtails. Leaving them alone may not be the best thing we can do. So just a few things to think about. Thank you.
Okay, Bonnie, you got the last word.
Hi, one other thing. Obviously, I already said it before regarding closed areas. When you're closing down or guys don't have the opportunity with groundfish, the last thing you want to do is further limit their economic ability to keep themselves afloat. So closed areas would definitely not be a good thing. And my apologies to Ms. Ramson, but I'm going to forget this by the next motion. I think I forgot this from before. Regarding the science, yellowtail versus winter flounder versus other flatfish, and I'm not sure who, but I know there's at least three studies right since 2006 that reviewed flatfish behavior relative to trawl. So, I mean, if there is the ability to utilize one study and make it clear that most of those flatfish work in tandem so that we could easily be able to modify scientific studies and apply with the studies of one flatfish to another. Clifford Ryer review of flatfish behavior relative to trawls, quantitative evaluation of flatfish behavior during capture by trawl, and a third one by Milliken and D'Altieris. So there is data out there to support it. Thank you very much.
Okay, back to the council. Tom and Terry, then let's move along. We have a lot of other motions to go through today.
Yeah, I was just going to remind everyone that we're coming right up on the gear modification motion, so we'll have an opportunity to have a quick discussion there. But I think we're sort of, this discussion has been good, and we're sort of coalescing around an approach. We have a AM payback backstop and some gear modifications that will allow us to stay within that, and as long as we do, no problem. It sounds like people are confident that those gear modifications will work to stay within the number. So I agree. I think a lot of us share concerns about using this type of approach in terms of an AM with, as we all know, a lot of things changing in time and space out there. I think static closures are perhaps problematic and maybe even unlikely to deliver the kind of results that we anticipate they will. So I agree with eliminating this option, keeping the other two in the document with the understanding that we may ultimately go with both, a proactive and a reactive AM in this case.
Terry, last word.
What he said.
Okay. Let's move this. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those who are opposed. 16. Okay, motion fails, 0-16-0.
The next committee motion offered on behalf of the Groundfish Committee is to add an option X as a possible accountability measure, any gear modifications in the small mesh fishery, Georges Bank area. This rather an admittedly vague motion passed 5-0-0.
To Laura's point earlier, we've had significant discussion. Is there, are there any questions or comments? Tom? Dr. Pierce? Benson? Rick?
So I guess I just have a question about the gear modifications. As I mentioned, this was an issue that was considered in Framework 48 last year. And at our December Groundfish Committee meeting last year, we heard testimony from squid and whiting fishermen, and I believe the comment that was made was, before the committee rejected it, was that, according to our meeting summary, the comment was that there was an issue, and I don't understand these two fisheries, so I don't know, you'll have to get more detail on it, that there was a concern about the differences between the day and night nature of the squid and whiting fisheries, whether the gears would work in the deeper water on Georges Bank, particularly for the squid fishery. And this is why the alternative was rejected in Framework 48, and I just think it would be helpful to understand what information we've learned since that testimony from industry members last year that says these issues are not a concern or we think we can address these now.
David.
Well, I certainly favor putting in an option that will relate to gear modifications to reduce the bycatch of yellowtail. However, the advisor's own assessment of the situation confuses the issue and certainly will make it difficult for the region to approve any particular gear that is suggested by us, let's say, or by fishermen, since in that memo from the advisory panel to the Groundfish Committee, three particular types of gear were noted, and my comments are somewhat similar to Tom Neese's, in that the advisors have said that these nets, the modified rule trawl, the large mesh belly net, the raised foot rope trawl, very well might not work to reduce the bycatch. More evaluation needs to be done, evaluation in deep water, and there are some other comments that they make that suggests that none of this gear is ready for prime time to reduce the bycatch. So as an accountability measure, yeah, that's good. Now, if this accountability measure doesn't kick in for a while, and I suppose it wouldn't, that would give the industry time, working with the service, I suppose, and other researchers to see what will work, how these particular three trawls might be modified. In other words, we're not going to be able to say in the framework what the net specifications will be. So it puts everybody at a disadvantage. It's the only way to go, obviously, shy of the closed areas, which no one seems to support, and I don't support them either. So I'll support the motion, but with an understanding that we don't have anything in hand yet based upon what the advisors have said, and we're going to have to wait for further research on these nets or some other net that would then enable the industry to deal with the triggering of an AM.
Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been a whiting fisherman my whole life. Most of my fishing has been in small mesh. And these selective gears do work. And I think the key is to get them into place so that you don't trip the AM. All right? Now, I'd like to try to find a mechanism here that we can work with industry to get these gear in place now. You don't trigger the AM, and these guys continue to fish. From what I'm hearing from the audience, I think that's what they're asking us. What they're afraid of is somebody coming in, rogue, doesn't use these selective gears, and just upsets the whole system. So I was trying to work on a motion, and maybe somebody here can help me, is that we send this back to committee, we send this back to industry, and we come up with a wide range of gears. Because we've studied multiple different types, and not all types work in every area. I've used the raised foot rope trawl in Ipswich Bay. It works beautiful. I try to use it in deep water Gulf of Maine. Not so good. All right? And this is the same stuff that I've heard on the cultivator. So let's go back to industry. Let's get a wide range of these bycatch avoidant devices, and let's get them into the plan as soon as we can. We're not going to have time to do all the data work that you do for an exempted fishery, but you're not looking to open up a fishery. You already have a fishery. You have to stay within an ACL. The best way to stay within an ACL is don't catch it. They're saying we can do it. Let's give them an opportunity to do it. We have until 2015 before an AM would be triggered. I think that's enough time to put it in place. So let's do some creative thinking here and come up with a mechanism for them to develop their gear and their fishery so they can keep going. Thank you.
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think similarly, based on the public comment we heard today, we may want to think of these as technical measures that are appropriate for the fishery rather than simply an accountability measure. If that's the case, I think the question is how are they most effectively brought into the plan. Can they be in fact incorporated through Framework 51, or does it have to be is more time needed to bring it into a subsequent action? And if a subsequent action is considered, one alternative would be for us to incorporate the gear in the squid mackerel butterfish fishery, at least for the Lalago portion of the fishery, and then treat the whiting gear separately in a different action. But I think they're probably best thought of as technical measures that would proactively prevent the catch of yellowtail within that stock area, And I think that's something that would obviously be beneficial. And, you know, I don't think we have to think of that in terms of an AM. That doesn't mean that you can't have an option here for it as an AM, but, you know, I think we ought to think about that as an option. If it can be done in 51 with adequate public input and comment, then maybe just include that as an option in 51. That is, incorporate these as technical measures, not necessarily as an AM.
To that point, Andy?
Staff consulted with General Counsel about an accountability measure in Framework 51 and versus a subsequent action in the Whiting process, such as specs or framework adjustment. We were told that accountability measure was required in Framework 51. At the same time, we were told by industry and the cooperative research group that the data that would be needed to test these gears could be collected, but not necessarily by November of this year to approve the framework. So what the advisors brought forward was a process that we weren't clear what the standard would be that would certify the gear as an AM or possibly as a technical measure. And at that time, we weren't sure what the process would be. It could be built off of the template we use for the B Day at Sea certification process. And the intention was to have a dialogue with the Groundfish PDT to work out the details of that in the Framework 51 document.
John, then Matt.
So the discussion we've had is that the gear modification was presented as an alternative to closed areas. And now that the council seems to move in that direction, certainly wouldn't want to hear that gear modification is not possible or unknown, because it's been presented as the alternative to closed areas. And I think closed areas went down 16-0. So if someone now says, well, gear modification's unknown, we can't do it, doesn't work, you know, I want to come back to closed areas and let's take that vote again. So we know that gear modifications are always something that can always be improved. Industry can always come up with new ways to make it better. And different gear modifications work differently in different areas. And so there are always subtleties about it. But I think as an accountability measure, what was presented in general testimony is, number one, they do work. Number two, they need to be required because some people just don't use them right now. And we'll get improvement if they're required and everyone uses them. And so we need to find a way that the overall level can improve by making them a required proactive accountability measure. And after that's done, industry will always be inventive, will always find ways to tinker, will always find ways to continue to make things better. So I think I don't want to see any backtracking from this. The gear modifications that many people use work. And so now we just need to see more and more people put them in place through the action that's on the table. And we don't want that to in any way stifle the inventiveness that has led to these inventions up till now.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On a semantic note, I'm not sure I'm comfortable voting for something as an option X. I think that sort of makes me a little uneasy. But I agree with the discussion so far. It seems like we're talking about gear modifications as a possible AM, but really the issue is they seem to promise a technical fix to So I agree with John, and I agree with Vincent. I would prefer to see this process unfold more rigorously, where we start to have some good verified information about how well which gears work in this. I believe they do. The audience testimony certainly supported that premise. So I'm just not sure where to go with this. I'd like to see them required. If they work, we need to test that. But we still, at the same time, need to have an AM to replace the area closures, which I think rightly put aside. I'm still torn, I have to admit.
Tom, and we'll go out to the audience.
Yeah, perhaps we could get to this, and to Rick's point, I think nobody wants to delay implementing these gear modifications if we can avoid it, like Vincent said. So maybe the alternative here or the way forward is to just add language that says, as a possible AM or technical measure, any gear modification in the small mesh fishery Georges Bank area. We'll be able to implement these if we decide to do it as a technical measure. We can implement them through the framework. And if we decide later on actually that we want to do it as a, you know, in at our next meeting, if we decide instead that we want to actually go forward with it as an AM, then we can delay implementation of it. So this just gives us both options.
So we've had significant discussion. So you're making a motion to amend the committee motion?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Are you seconding it, Matt?
I was going to offer a friendly, just remove the X, just add an option.
We need a sec. Who's seconding it? Laura's seconding it. Okay. Okay, Andy, then we're going to go to the audience.
Just one piece of clarification. In the observer data, we have three raised foot rope trips observed in the cultivator shoal areas. They produced roughly a two-thirds reduction in the yellowtail catch, but it wasn't statistically significant because of small sample size. The forecasted sub-ACL for Georges Bank yellowtail is about three-quarters reduction relative to the recent catch, estimated yellowtail catch in the small mesh fishery. So whether that meets a standard and we call it working is a matter of discussion and, I guess, further evaluation. Thanks.
Okay. Who in the audience wants to speak in favor? Does anybody want to speak in opposition? Okay, so I see Dave and Chris, and then we're going to move this along.
Okay, David Gaithel, Hampton, New Hampshire. I think you have two separate issues here. One is Andy's issue of being able to analyze something and put it in the document and having a bunch of ongoing studies that may not have been done on Georges and may not be available for November. The second issue is the issue of doing the right thing and putting in the gear, as John said, then you'll get the data. And that's the way forward. Have the Whiting advisors come up with a list of what they consider to be bycatch reduction trawls. I heard of at least four here today. There's probably more that are being used. They may not be being used on Georges at the moment because they're not required, but they're being used in other areas. Put them in, let the fishery run. And if it exceeds the AM with those bycatch reduction devices, so be it. But those are the best we have at the moment, and I think they're pretty good. And then you'll get the data. Now, the problem that Andy has, I don't know how you solve that by November, because you're not going to get the data until you require the gears to be used on the grounds. It's kind of like a, you know, chicken and an egg type thing. And maybe that's, you put it in as simply as that. You know, in other areas, based on the use of these gears in other areas, they have demonstrated proven bycatch reduction. We are instituting them on Georges Bank with the expectation that they will allow the sub-ACL for Georges Bank yellowtail not to be exceeded. And then over the next year, year and a half, whatever, you know, on a year-by-year basis through the observer trips out there, you do gather that information. You can't wait for studies in every area. We haven't got the money. We haven't got the time. The simple way forward here is, and I would suggest you task the Whiting advisors with doing it because they're the ones most familiar with the gear. Send it back to the Whiting advisors and the Whiting committee. Have them produce a list of bycatch reduction gears that they believe will be acceptable for use in the squid and the Whiting fishery on Georges Bank.
have that forwarded to the Groundfish Committee for inclusion in Framework 51, and then gather your data over the coming years to prove that you were, in fact, correct. Thank you.
Chris.
Chris Brown, Point Judith. Sometimes we're just going to have to settle for doing the right thing. We don't have the time. We don't have the data. You know, there is a mechanism by which we could get this implemented in about 2 weeks. It's called the sector process. The decentralization of regulatory authority was what intoxicated me to a point to vote for those things. And this seems like a classic example where we can possibly, through our own fishing agreements, make it mandatory to tow these gears 30 days from now. You know, we don't need you to do it. We can do it internally as a community. I would prefer that a lot of these gear solutions are done this way. You guys, nice bunch of guys, gals, guys, very cumbersome at times, if you've noticed that. We can get this done much quicker than you. There is no more important fish in the ocean than the ones that we have left to work with. We need not to waste those. We need not to squander those. And we need to start generating good results as soon as is possible. So why don't you let us take care of it? And if we want to memorialize it down the road through this process, that's fine. But I think a good place for this industry to start would be to look at it itself for solutions, as opposed to looking to you guys for solutions all the time. And we have that process at our disposal. Thank you.
Okay. Back to the council. Terry?
Wait a minute, Chris. I want to ask you a question. So how many of the lighting squid boats are in sectors?
I think quite a few of them. I think probably the majority. There may be some outliers. I know that, you know, a few guys in my sector do go to, they go to George's, and a few guys that are not in my sectors go to George's fishing for squid and whiting. I assume the guys that fish for whiting in Gloucester, by virtue of their zip code, are enrolled in sectors. Maggie's got a few. I don't see a problem with the sectors working together and coming up with you know, implementable solutions in the short term. Maybe this becomes an incentive. I don't know. Maybe there are some people that don't want to join. Maybe they don't feel as if they can or want any part of it. But it was just a suggestion that could take care of probably the largest number of users, you know, that we have.
George.
Thank you. Circling back to the bigger issue of accountability measures here, with the pound-for-pound payback provision, if that were to be put in place, is there any consequence if the industry, if their allocate, their sub ACL for yellowtail went to zero? Is there anything to prevent or constrain the continued fishing for whiting or lolago? If there isn't, then that's not really much of an accountability measure. There's no, it's empty. So it seemed like there has to be something else to go along with that to make it whole.
Okay, Council. Tom?
Sorry, I'm ready to vote on this, but the larger issue that George brought up, I'm not sure I entirely understand the question. If the entire yellowtail ACL goes to zero, what are we going to do about the squid fishery?
It's not specific. What I was raising wasn't specific to this motion. I'm talking about the full suite of accountability measures here that you're trying to develop. My concern was, Sarah reminded me of this, and I think it's a valid concern that with just the pound for pound payback on the yellowtail ACL, the industry could go over, have their ACL sub ACL reduced to zero potentially, and it would have no consequence to the whiting fishery or the lolago fishery. They could continue to fish for whiting and lolago. As far as I understand, there'd be nothing to stop them from fishing, nothing to slow them down, nothing to constrain how or where or when they fish. So it's empty. unless I'm misunderstanding something.
Follow up, Tom.
Yeah, I guess I sort of thought that with a pound-for-pound payback, if it went to zero, you weren't fishing. In the same way that if you were over as a sector, 100% of your subsequent year's ace, you wouldn't be able to fish. Right? That's the nature I thought of a pound-for-pound payback. We need to talk more about that. But my preference would be to focus on the motion on the board, deal with it, and then fill any gaps in after that time.
I mean, the motion doesn't say that. So, George?
Well, just to that point, without a specific measure to do that, I don't think that exists. It's different from the sectors where you do have regulations and requirements to cause that to happen. I think maybe it was just an assumption on all of our parts, not all of us, but some of us, that there was going to be a consequence. But I don't think the way the regulations read right now, without doing something more, that there would be any.
Mike, and then let's then vote on the motion to amend. And if we can't find a resolution to it today, we can certainly remand it back to the PDT and the committee to come back to us in November with a consequence.
Yeah, I think we're talking about three different things at once here. One is the one that George just raised, which I agree is a real issue, and somehow if there's a loophole there because people hadn't thought it through, there should be some resolution to that, because I agree with George's comment that that's a real issue. The second is basically good fisheries management that would deal with our national standard that says, to the extent practical, reduce bycatch. And that isn't about an accountability measure. That should be part of the plan, as other people have mentioned. And I guess that there potentially are, as Dave Gaethel mentioned, good technical measures that could contribute to that. But that perhaps at this point it's too late to actually put those into the plan. Is that what we sort of heard from Andy's comments earlier on? And if that is the case, then the sort of solution of looking towards the industry to take the initiative itself through its sector plans seems like a very positive thing. This motion is addressing an accountability measure, which I think is separate from a proactive thing that might be done by putting something into the plan right now to address the bycatch national standard, or something the industry might do in itself. And my concern about it is it's so vague. I haven't a clue how it would be analyzed. So I think we have to conceptualize it a bit more. And to me, if this is to be an accountability measure, I think it should conceptually essentially lay out something whereby the industry could develop plans for the application of technical measures to be accountable for their past overages that were at least conservation neutral. And the incentive for that would be that those, if they are demonstrated scientifically with data to be at least conservation neutral, with a payback, there would be an incentive to actually implement such plans and develop them. But see, right now, that just says technical measures as an accountability measure. There's no standard by which to evaluate them, or standard by which to judge whether they're successful or not. I would view that one probably could develop some sort of a framework that says if you exceed your ACL for the small mesh fishery, that an option would be to put in place technical measures that would reduce your future catch by at least the equivalent of that which would have been achieved by paying back, and that would be an accountability measure that's conservation neutral. But unless we have some standard like that, I don't know what anyone's analyzing.
Further discussion on the motion to amend? Seeing none, those support the motion to amend, please indicate so. Those opposed? The motion carries 15-1-0. We're back to the main motion as amended. Those who support the main motion as amended, please indicate so. Motion carries 16-0-0. Tom, the next motion is on the Whitehake specs.
That's right.
And then the following motion's on Yellowtail.
Yeah, perhaps we could
let's do the
breeze Whitehake. Right through Whitehake.
Let's do the Whitehake and then take a break.
PK thinks Yellowtail's going to go easy, too. So I'd move on behalf of the committee. Sorry.
Before we move on, just a clarification question. So you'd like the PDT to think through what the consequences would be of these two different AMs? Is that correct? Or are you making motions to for the previous AMs related to the small mesh fishery?
So my understanding of passing those motions is that we would continue on with two AM alternatives. One is the pound-for-pound payback as revised here today. The second is a proactive AM with gear modifications as outlined by or suggested by the Whiting AP and analyzed going forward. And then that second proactive AM would also be included in the document straight up as a technical measure and not identified as a proactive AM.
Jamie?
I still think that George Darcy's point still stands, and I don't have any clarification on what happens when this AM occurs.
I think that's a fair point, and maybe we could take our break now. We could put our heads together and think about what gaps exist and then finish up afterwards.
Unless Jamie has
Jamie
a solution
hates
for
breaks.
Us.
I don't like breaks, no. Just a final thought, that whatever that consequence is, you should think that it will not necessarily be in the next year. It might be the year after that, depending on how reporting and monitoring occurs.
Tom?
And just related to that, I think that the committee needs to think a little bit about the interaction of these AMs with the U.S. Canada Georges Bank Yellowtail TAC, which has an immediate payback provision if there's an overage, at least to spell out so it's clear to everybody what happens. It is currently spelled out for the other sub-ACLs about how it's treated if it's overage, but it needs to be addressed for this fishery as well.
John?
I think there's nothing that could prohibit introducing language that would make what I think, Terry, you assumed was in there. That is, if you go over, you do shut it down. It may be that's what people assumed was already in there. But we'd have to make that language that was explicit. And I think we'd have to... I don't know whether we have to incorporate that in the motion to do that, but it does seem like taking the break and figuring out what we have to do to correct that, but we need to correct it.
Okay. So Russ has a quick announcement, and then we are going to take a break so we can resolve this, and then we've got a whole lot more business to attend to.
Just a quick announcement. One of the new things that we've been doing as a center to try and make our science more transparent is that every time one of these meetings gets close to one of our labs is to invite our scientists to set up some posters talking about some of the science that we do. We've actually tried to feature some of the science that isn't prominently discussed in the council process, and so our folks will be out there through the lunch break, certainly, and available to talk to folks. So please avail yourself of that opportunity.
Thank you, Ross. We're going to take a full 10-minute break.
Our discussion today, I think we're going to need to remand those issues to our groundfish PDT and our groundfish committee, and hopefully we'll work out a number of those issues and be presenting them back at our meeting here in November.
Is there an objection to this approach? I mean, given the time that we are today, we don't want to move ahead something that we're going to have to revisit again anyhow. Is there an objection? Are there any specific issues, Vincent?
I'd like to make one addition to this, and to have the PDT investigate the ability to transfer unused ACE to the sub-ACL.
So you want to task the PDT to consider that for the committee's discussion at the next committee meeting?
That is correct, Mr. Chair, and develop maybe the process to do so, if it's able to.
Is that a task that the PDT can accommodate in that timeline?
Can I see the motion? The tasking motion? It's not a motion. I can kind of read it. We're on a pretty tight timeline right now to get Framework 51 ready for prime time. And I guess any additional tasking that's not specific to refining or revising the options that are being discussed is going to be very difficult.
Vincent?
Then can I request that the agency maybe investigate the possibility of doing it through a sector's ops plan?
Tom?
I guess I mean, Jamie and I are looking at each other. I'm not sure we really understand what you're trying to do here, Vincent.
For clarification, Tom, during the industry meeting, there was a few gentlemen, Southern New England, have quite a bit of Georges Bank Yellowtail ACE that they're not using. And they want to be able to use it in their whiting operations if they have to. And, you know, I just wanted to know if there's a possibility to transfer that to their sub-ACL.
George? John?
Well, we can certainly look at it. I don't know what mechanisms we might need to do that. Whether it might need an amendment rather than a framework, but we can certainly look at the technical aspects and see what options might be available.
Thank you.
Tom?
I think outside of boats enrolled in sectors, it would require an amendment. I don't know if Deirdre made it back to the meeting room, but this is something that we have discussed under the general category scallop yellowtail bycatch and have discussed options wherein a general category vessel with a groundfish permit enrolled in a sector would be able to utilize that quota on those trips. But it would require some changes, but I know Deirdre has looked into that a little bit. I don't know that we would be able to do it in this framework, but it's something that we could consider. And the change there, at least as I understand it, is in the list of approvable gears. But it's something that we'll have to probably develop over time.
Okay, so to bring this to a close, I'm not seeing any objection to remaining continued discussion on the small mesh fishery AM back to the committee, and we're going to move on. Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of the committee, I'd move, and now I'm missing it. All right. I'd move to support the ABCs for white hake as set by the SSC for 2014 to 2016. That motion passed 5-0-0.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Jamie, could you give the council just a brief description of what the SSC ABCs were?
Sure. The SSC applied the default control rule, and the ABCs for 2014, 15, and 16 were set. Do you want the numbers, or?
Please.
For 2014, the ABC is 4,642 metric tons. For 2015, the ABC is 4,713 metric tons. 2016, the ABC is 4,645 metric tons. Do you want the OFLs as well? For 2014, the OFL is 6,082 metric tons. For 2015, 6,237 metric tons. and for 2016 is 6,314 metric tons.
Thank you, Jamie. Committee discussion? Mike.
Just as a friendly amendment, may I suggest that the word set be replaced by recommended? I believe that the SSC recommends and we set. Thank you.
Any other comments? Any comments from the audience? Back to the council. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 16-0-0. Okay, Tom, you're on to the hard one.
So now we have a sort of interesting sequence. I'm going to ask Karen to bring up the motion that we postponed discussion of yesterday at the close of our session. So with that, I'd move to substitute on behalf of the Groundfish Committee to adopt an ABC OFL of 425 metric tons of Georgia's Bank yellowtail flounder. That motion passed 3-2 with zero abstentions.
Committee motion does not need a second. Discussion. Dr. Pierce.
I support the motion, and I do so with a full appreciation of all of the comments, all of the points raised by John Bullard yesterday. He certainly reiterated in a very convincing way the arguments, the issues that were clearly described in the letter that he forwarded to you, Mr. Chairman. But I cannot support that position, that is the 400 metric tons, for a number of reasons, one being that the process that was followed to arrive at the 400 metric tons with the TMGC, to me, is quite unsettling. The fact that we went to the Canadians with two different perspectives, and the Canadians noted that, embarrassing for all concerned. Yes, I understand that if indeed the regional administrator has to go back to the Canadian counterparts, that would be embarrassing too. So, I mean, embarrassment is out there, and it should not have happened, but it did. So we'll move forward now. There was a majority of TMGC members supporting a number that was not 400. I believe it was 450. It may have been 425. I'm not sure now. But anyways, I think it was 425. So I'm going to support the majority of the TMGC members who apparently had that perspective of 425. I also have a few other reasons that are near and dear to my heart. I can't set aside concerns specifically. We have a groundfish fishery failure. That was declared by the Secretary of Commerce last year, and we know what that means. This council hoped that would have happened, and it did happen. We all acknowledge the dire situation for the groundfish fishery industry in New England. It's in facing some very serious and dire economic times. So this council tries to mitigate in many ways for the low ACLs and what the industry is facing. So I consider dropping the 400 metric tons to be inconsistent with the fact that we have this fisheries failure and we are trying in every way possible, this council is, to mitigate for the impacts of the rules in place. So that's my first reason. Second reason is that I have very little confidence in the Georgia's Bank yellowtail flounder assessment. The assessment was not rejected, and the regional administrator notes that in his letter. High uncertainty, but it was not rejected. I believe it should have been. The retrospective pattern is very pronounced, and frankly, I cannot forget work done by the Northeast Fishery Science Center not too long ago by some of their leading scientists, where they said in a formal report that when you have a strong retrospective pattern, assessment should be rejected for fisheries management purposes. Now, that's not happening. And in this particular case, it did not happen, but I'm influenced by it. So I can't support the findings of that particular assessment. I'm also influenced very strongly by a colleague of mine, and we all know who he is, SSC member, Dr. Stephen Cadran. He's a SMAS scientist, professor. He's a scientist with the Massachusetts Marine Fisheries Institute, the MFI. Now, I don't think council members have seen this document. Maybe you have. I saw it because Steve sent it to me. I also was on Saving Seafood as an attachment, announcing what the mayor of New Bedford had requested, that is 500 metric tons, not less than that. Now, Dr. Cadran, in that one pager, and he is the, as far as I'm concerned, based upon his former involvement with the Northeast Fishery Science Center, being one of their principal scientists, the yellowtail flounder scientist, he is the expert on yellowtail flounder as far as I'm concerned, and he's a major contributor to the SSC. Couldn't be at the SSC meeting when they discussed yellowtail because of some unbreakable SMAS commitments regarding faculty hirings. But anyways, he makes it very clear in a one-pager that was sent to the SSC that he cannot support the assessment, he cannot support the projections, and he provides some good reasons for that, such as work done in concert with the Northeast Fishery Science Center, with all the grad students at the university, tagging work and other work, swept area surveys, where the data from that work counters the assessment conclusions that we're now wrestling with regarding the projection in the 400 metric tons. So I'm strongly influenced by that. I'm also influenced by the fact that the Sea Scallop Fishery, on their own, working with SMAS, they're involved in a very important bycatch avoidance program. I mean, they're working on their own to have this work, and I give them credit for their efforts to reduce bycatch, and they have done so in a rather dramatic fashion. I feel that by dropping it down from 500 to 400, we don't recognize the good work done by the Sea Scallop Fishery that, frankly, is working in a rather informal, if not formal, partnership with this council to do what we need to do, and that is reduce the bycatch of yellowtail flounder in the Scallop Fishery. So kudos to the industry that's so involved in this bycatch avoidance. I don't want to, in a sense, not recognize all of their efforts to cut that bycatch. And I anticipate that they'll continue to work in that regard, dropping it down to 400 and then, of course, taking that portion of that for the yellowtail flounder, bycatch in the scallop fishery. That's inconsistent with our partnership with the industry and their efforts to reduce the bycatch in the sea scallop fishery. The sea scallop fishery is extremely valuable. We all know that. Number one value in the nation, New Bedford specifically, in terms of economic value. The yellowtail flounder bycatch in the sea scallop fishery now, even with the bycatch avoidance program, has yet to be calculated for 2013. I don't believe it's available. Certainly a projection for 2014 is difficult to make. I don't want to put the sea scallop industry in particular in a position where, despite their best efforts to avoid the bycatch of yellowtail flounder, they catch it. They catch a low level based on 400 tons, and that results in the triggering of accountability measures. And to me, that is inconsistent with council intent in our relationship, a strong relationship, management partnership, so to speak, with the sea scallop fishery. So I do not want to run a risk, recognizing it cannot be calculated with any accuracy, run a risk of having an accountability measure be triggered. So for that reason, I think that the SSC recommendation to go to 500 metric tons, but less is the preference on their part, that 425 is consistent with that. Hopefully, I would like it to be 450, not 425, but this is a motion to amend to 425, so I'll go with that. My preference is to eventually end up with 450 to make it an even more meaningful difference between the 400 and the 5 make it more meaningful difference between 425 and 400. So I'll support the 425 at this particular point conclude that going to that 425 or 450 is done in a way that is less than 500, and it's a practical amount, 425. So those are my reasons, Mr. Chairman, some of them anyways, why I cannot accept the 400 metric tons.
Before we move on, I was remiss in not recognizing Jamie, who's done some analysis since last week's Groundfish Committee meeting. We're getting closer.
Thank you. So, briefly, I'm just going to highlight some information on Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder. As we heard yesterday, model indicates that spawning stock biomass has been declining, especially in recent years. F has been above FREF of 0.25 throughout the assessment time period. There's also a lack of older fish that's highlighted in the bottom panel on the right. And this lack of older fish is based on the assessment information. This includes U.S. and Canada information. Recruitment continues to be poor, and as we heard yesterday, all four of the surveys have shown declining trends. You have a letter from NIMS that provides some guidance. I just want to show where this 562 number comes from. It comes from the draft assessment document. It's Table 21, this is something the SSC did have and that we've been looking at as well. The NIMS guidance letter indicates that 562 is likely biased high and that the 2014 quota should have a greater uncertainty buffer than the standard default control of 75% FMSY. And therefore, because it is likely biased high, accounting for uncertainty, a total ABC would be 400. So what I want to walk you through just briefly is some of the biological implications from the based on the assessment information of 400 versus 425 metric tons. So in the top panel, the probability of F being higher than FREF, and FREF is 0.25, there's really no change if you have a there's 100% probability of it exceeding FREF under both of those scenarios. For 400 metric tons or 425 metric tons, the probability of biomass increase of 10% at 400 metric tons is 66%, And for 425, the probability of a 10% increase is 50%. So you note that that's a 16% change by increasing the APC from 400 to 425. On the bottom panel, moving from 400 to 425, the probability of any biomass increase reduces from 100% to 83% chance. You'll note that's a 13% change. So what are the fisheries implications? This table is not meant to necessarily be read right now, but what you did hear yesterday is that the U.S. portion of the Canadian of the share has shifted, and now from 43% in the previous year, now at 82%. And because of that, the U.S. ABC would increase. So under the on the top, you'll see what that translates into for a U.S. Georges Bank ABC of 328 under the 400 metric ton scenario and 349 under the 425 metric ton scenario. What I want to walk you through next is that bottom panel and what are some of the different implications for the groundfish and the scallop fishery. So with a so I'm now looking at the difference between 400 metric tons and 425 between years, so looking at 2014 versus 2013 numbers, at the 400 metric ton level, there would be an increase of 137.7 metric tons from the previous year for groundfish and a decrease for scallops of 32.5 from the previous year. At 425 metric tons, there would be an increase for groundfish of 153.6 metric tons and a smaller decrease of 29.3 metric tons. Just comparing these two numbers at face value, they result the difference between 400 and 425 for these two fisheries is 15.9 metric tons for groundfish and 3.2 metric tons for scallops. And I can take questions if you have any.
Thank you, Jamie. Questions specific to this presentation before we begin our debate. Mike?
Yeah, if you could go back to the beginning of it where you showed the assessment results with the stock trajectories. It was one first or second slide. Can we get back to that? Okay, so what you're showing there is the decline in SSB based on the split series assessment, and then you've imposed the point for the row adjusted. Then in the next slide, or a few more, okay, in the next slide, we see that if you don't have the dotted line is the reference level, right? So if you don't row adjust, it says that we're pretty much at the reference level. But with the row adjustment, we're substantially above it.
Correct.
Okay. And then you discuss where the 400 tons might have been derived from the 524, mm-hmm. I believe. A couple more slides.
Yep. Can you go to one more?
That. So that's based on the split series without the adjustment. The projections that follow, are those based on the split series without the projections, without the adjustment, or with the adjustment? With the row adjustment. I'm trying to see whether we're looking at things that are consistent here.
So this is from the... I'm pulling this out of the assessment document, this table, but this is based on the NIMS guidance letter to show where this information came from.
No, I understand that, but that particular assessment where that 562 comes from,
right.
If we accept that, says we're right about at FMS, at the reference level, a hair above it, but right, but very close to it. Mm-hmm. So then you go on and you give some results as to whether the stock probabilities of increase or decrease, and I'm trying to determine whether those are from the same assessment.
So those are from the same assessment, but based on applying the row adjustment.
Okay.
Yes,
so,
correct.
So we actually have an inconsistency here in terms of the information. We've got an argument for 400 based on one assessment, and then your description of the implications of 400 based on a different assessment. Now, I don't actually think it's worth debating that, really. I think my main point is, I think you can come up with all sorts of numbers depending on which one you pick. And the bottom line to me is the SSC did conclude and had a strong conclusion, as far as I'm concerned, that this stock is severely depleted and we should have as low a catch as is reasonable or achievable. But I think any of the efforts to justify 500, 400, 425, 450, frankly, to me, are all sort of waving hands at a choice of between a number of different assessments, all of which the SSC was very skeptical about. Thank you.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Dr. Sissonwine about the waving hands. I mean, since this council has assumed responsibility for managing the stock in 1977, we've lost 20,000 metric tons of yellowtail biomass. We're fighting over 25 metric tons today. I think we need to step back, and I agree that the process by which we derived 400 metric tons, or by which 400 metric tons was given to us, is not ideal. In fact, Mr. Bullard, please, I share the criticisms that other people in this audience will have about how we got to that. But at the same time, too, if there was ever something to demonstrate desperate times, it's the spawning stock biomass graph that we have here. We need to bring this stock back. Magnuson requires that we rebuild stocks. And if we can do something that allows us to give the stock a chance to increase itself by 10%, we have to do it. We've lost 20,000 metric tons in the last 40 years. Enough is enough, I think. We need to start turning this around. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
John?
I made a number of points yesterday, and I just want to, I don't want to repeat them, but I do want to respond a little bit to some issues raised by my good friend Dr. Pierce. And yesterday I found myself a number of times in agreement with Dr. Pierce, which always makes me uncomfortable. And now I find myself much more in a comfortable place disagreeing with my good friend. Last year he was making similar arguments in support of 1,150 tons for yellowtail. And the service disapproved that number and imposed a limit of 500. And, you know, I wish that had done the job. And, you know, but we continue to see a depleted stock of yellowtail flounder. And now we are saying that 400 needs to be the limit. And, you know, I hope that's a number that will do the job, because if it isn't, then next year, you know, I think we're probably going to be talking about a number lower than that, and we're probably going to be repeating this same discussion. But we have to find something that is going to turn around these charts until we rebuild this stock. And that's what I think our responsibility is to rebuild the stock of yellowtail flounder, which hasn't had a good recruitment class for, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years. And this is very troubling. I don't know what the cause of it is, but there just doesn't seem to be any good news. And I know there's tremendous uncertainty in the science, and people can poke holes at will in it. When I listen to Dr. Steve Cadran, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, while he pokes holes a mile wide in the science, he also says unequivocally this is a depleted stock, and he also says when giving a management advice, which isn't really what he's asked for. He says this should be a bycatch-only fishery. He said that this year at a session in New Bedford. He said it last year when he was at the SSC meeting. He said this should be a bycatch-only fishery because this is a depleted stock. And that always seems to get forgotten when people say 1150 in reference to last year and when they say 500 in reference to this year. They forget that he also says it's a depleted stock, should be a bycatch-only fishery. They home in on numbers without the other part of his or the SSC's message. The 400 allowed can't remember the exact number, but a 50% chance or more than 50% chance in rebuilding. I think that's what we're supposed to be about, rebuilding this stock. And so it also said the SSC that catches should be reduced as much as practicable. Catches should be reduced. It didn't say increase catches. It said catches should be reduced. Catches should be reduced as much as practicable. Not keep them equal. Catches should be reduced. So I do pay attention to the SSC. Everything they say, not just what is in their report, but everything they say in their deliberations. And so, yes, it's a lower number. The share that we're allowed, 82%, which is very fortunate, and I don't think that will last, but this year, 82% is what we're getting, and that's fortunate. That will result in total for a reduced catch from last year. But it is doable. I pointed out yesterday that so far this year, scallopers and groundfish have landed 52. Now, the scallop year begins March 1st, so that's 6 months, halfway through the year, they've landed 33 metric tons, 33. So I don't know what they're going to land, but halfway into the year, 33 metric tons. And so is this possible? Yeah, I think it's possible. And I think there is another argument that Matt and others have mentioned, which is the process by which this has taken place. People have arguments against the process, so fair enough. And I addressed that yesterday, and I will try and be brief, but I want to address it again. And that is people object to NOAA imposing or strong-arming the TMGC and the council into a number. And I'm sorry that you feel it that way, but I think, as Mike said, the difference between, and as Jamie's presentation points out, the difference between 400 and 425, certainly when you listen to the SSC discussion, is there, and the uncertainty in the science, if there is a scientist who can nail this down, I don't know. But the impact on the scallop fleet is three metric tons. So I think a lot of people have an argument less about the three metric tons than they do about the process about this. Facing the TMGC discussions, we felt that it was necessary in advance of that to let our folks know in advance what the service would find as best available science, the number that we would approve. and we didn't have a lot of time to do it. We didn't have a lot of time in that schedule to go conduct lots of meetings, involve lots of people. There wasn't the time to do that. So I refer to the discussions we had with Rip Cunningham, who said it would be helpful to us if you told us in advance what you'd approve in advance. And we took that seriously. So we discussed what we would approve in advance. We didn't do that last year. You know, we waited till after the fact, when you'd presented something, and then after the fact, we disapproved the council number and came back with 500. We thought it would be helpful in advance this time to say this is the number, and we did that, and we let the members of the TMGC know that in advance. Here's what we'd approve, and the TMGC said, knowing that information in advance, here's the U.S. position. That hasn't been reported correctly by Saving Seafood or most anybody else, but that's the way we did it. I don't think it's strong-arming to tell people here's what the agency's going to approve, you know, but that's what we did.
Before we continue the debate on the merits of the motion to substitute, I do want to find out if there are any questions for Jamie. Russ.
Could you go back to slide 4 in the presentation? It's a bubble plot. Jamie, could you just explain that slide, take a little time to explain what that slide's showing, because I'm going to come back to it when I make some general comments.
So what this slide is showing is it's tracking different year classes of fish. The red lines are indicating specific year classes. I believe the lowest one is 2006. And each of the bubbles indicates the larger the bubble, the larger proportionally the catch at age was for those fish in the surveys. So when you see a declining trend or a lack of bubbles in that, specifically in that orange block that I've highlighted in the corner, that indicates that there's a lack of older fish. Lack of older fish would indicate that there may be difficulties with recruitment, problems with spawning stock biomass, as indicated from the previous plots. So this is information from multiple surveys that shows a lack of older fish in recent years in the assessments.
Okay, and the same figure, if I look at the left-hand column of bubbles, those are the age 1 fish, and the next column over are the age 2 fish. And what I see there, and I can't even see the dots from here. I'm sure nobody can see them in the back of the room. But there's a string of about 5 or 6 extremely small dots in the last 5 or 6 years of the survey for age 1s. So there's no small fish being picked up by the surveys. They were picked up by the surveys previously. If I move over one column and look at that column of numbers, there are a string of four small dots in the last 4 years of the survey. So there's no age 2 fish coming into the fishery either. Okay? If you look up those columns, you cannot see a string of weak year classes like that anywhere in the time series that dates back to 1973. And we know from the landings that the stock was in much better condition between 1940 and 1973. So we have an unprecedented series of weak year classes. There's a term for that. It's recruitment failure. Recruitment failure is one of the symptoms of stock collapse. Thank you.
Questions only? Okay, Mary Beth.
Well, I think in general, back to the motion, I support the motion. We could talk about, you know, some of the indicators in the assessment, and I think we've been all talking about them for a long time, and we know that the stock in general, if you look at that, as Russ indicated, is in poor shape, and we're talking about numbers that, you know, quite frankly, as Laura was mentioned yesterday, are well below any levels of catch that we've seen in this fishery for a very, very long time, if ever. And to me, it is about the process. I mean, we have a process with the reauthorized Magnuson Act that says that we need to consider scientific uncertainty, that the council needs to rely on the advice from its SSC. The agency scientists participate in the SSC process. And then after the fact, they, you know, impose an additional scientific buffer. Well, we need to be able to go. We need to tell the public with confidence that we're going to go to the SSC, that's an independent body of scientists from a variety of places, that they're going to look at all this information and then tell us what they think the appropriate scientific buffer is. Then the council's bound by that number, and then the TMGC needs to be able to move forward with that number. And I appreciate the fact that the, you know, the agency says, well, we want to give you this information up front. But their whole justification for the number is ridiculous. There is no overfishing limit. Nobody could determine it. And yet they say we need to impose a number less than what the SSC recommended because we need to prevent overfishing. The argument does not hold up. That aside, it's still about the process. And I don't think this is the right process. We need to let the public know, go to the SSC, listen to the discussion, and that's the limit. And we can't have, you know, imposition of additional buffers outside of that imposed by the agency because they decided that's the best thing to do. I just don't agree with that. And now we're arguing about 25 metric ton. It is about the process. It's not about the numbers. There's no statistical basis for saying 400 is better than 425. There isn't. We're arguing about the process here, just to be clear.
Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Mary Beth that there are issues with regards to the process, and I think we'd all agree from the agency, the council, and certainly the TMGC members that there were hiccups in the process and miscommunication. I think that could all be improved. I think we all also agree that we have issues with regards to our assessment and the certainty of our catch advice in this stock. Those issues are all real. And they need to be addressed, but that's not what we're doing today. What we're doing today and what our work is to support and incorporate in Framework 51 a yellowtail tack that we agreed upon in good faith with the Canadians, and that's 400 metric tons. So we have to address the process issues, we have to address the communications, and ultimately we have to improve our science and the certainty of our catch advice, but we have to demonstrate that we're negotiating in good faith and that we're going to implement what we agreed upon. And we talk a lot, and I've heard last year during this discussion, we're going to send a message. I think last year we did send a message. We're going to support a yellowtail flounder tack that we know you're not going to approve. Message sent. We know what the outcome of that was, right? I'd like to send a different message this year, which is when we send a team to negotiate a quota in good faith with another country, that country can have pretty high level of confidence that that's what we're going to move forward with. That's what this council is going to support. That's what I think our work here today is, and that's a 400 metric ton number. Beyond that, we absolutely do need to work better with the agency in communicating up front and working out some of those issues. But I am going to support, as a member of the TMGC and a member of this council, 400 metric tons because that's what we agreed upon with the Canadians. Thank you.
Terry.
I was just going to address a couple of comments that John had made about hearing stuff about strong. I don't think we got strong-armed up there. There was a couple of incidences where I didn't agree with the attitude of a couple of things, but I don't think I certainly am not going to get strong-armed by anybody. I didn't get this far in life by being strong-armed by anybody. And the 52 tons, you've referred to that a couple of times over the last couple of days. We had boats April 28th, April 29th, April 30th of last year out there fishing, getting 15, 20,000 haddock a day, catching some yellowtails. And then the misreporting thing came in We had to leave that area, and we couldn't go back there for 2 months because of cod reporting. So, I mean, while the fish were there, we weren't able to fish there. So, I mean, I don't think that would be the normal representation of 6 months out of the year. That was the 2 months that the fish are there and we're there. We weren't there this year. So I just wanted to address that. So.
Mike?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that various comments have been made about the SSC's role in this, and I think the SSC could have been more explicit about what it thought about the existing assessments and so forth, but so be it. We've got what we've got. And I certainly think that the 400 tons that's been put forward is completely consistent with the SSC advice. I mean, obviously, it's less. It doesn't exceed 400, and it's 500 rather, and it's in the direction of as low as practicable, given it's the lowest number that anybody's put forward as being practicable. So I can't see how anyone can argue that somehow what's being proposed is 400 violates the SSC advice. I don't think 425 would violate it either, but 400 is certainly consistent with it. And given that, and that I agree with Russ's comments, it's pretty clear recruitment. The evidence is that recruitment's been about as bad as it's ever been for the last several years, and that's my greatest concern, more so than the lack of the older fish, is the lack of the young fish. The SSC's message was pretty clear that this stock is depleted, and again, catch should be kept as low as practicable. I see no reason whatsoever not to be supportive of the 400 metric tons as opposed to some other number. And beyond that, as Tom has put forward, frankly, I see we've gotten to the point where we're essentially, trying to argue about. It's more about who wins the argument than it is about the substance of the argument. And I don't think that's useful and constructive. I think, quite frankly, it's one of the most serious problems that we have in New England fisheries. And I say that having a lot of experience, sitting in other fishery management councils where people try to find solutions and not continue the arguments. Sorry for that editorial. But having said it, we have to come to an end point and come up with a number, and I think Tom's comments about where we are right now and which number makes the most sense given the negotiations that have gone on and the path of least resistance to get this resolved is the 400 number. So I would not support the amendment, and I would support the original motion for 400. Thank you.
Jamie?
Just a point of clarification in my presentation, the bubble plot was for catches. But the survey plots show a similar pattern for all of the seasonal surveys. I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
David, then we'll go to the audience.
Yeah, I certainly don't dispute the fact that the resource is in serious shape. Yes, indeed, the abundance is way down. No question about that. I don't argue that we have a resource that is healthy. In no way, shape, or form is it. I argue about the assessment and how we're using it to make important decisions, and we're deceiving ourselves if we think it's telling us something that really is reliable, because it isn't. And I should also point out, too, that the lack of the younger fish and the lack of the older fish very well, actually, it is due to seals. That was the conclusion reached by the TMGC. If we recall yesterday, we heard the presentation by Loretta, and this high natural mortality rate was considered to be caused primarily by seals. So we shouldn't forget that. That was the conclusion of the TMGC. Loretta didn't agree with it, of course, but the Canadian scientists prevailed in that particular discussion. So if it is seals, then certainly things don't look good for the future without question. I would move to amend the motion because it is incorrect. The committee made a mistake. I can see it now after looking at what the SSC said. The SSC said that the OFL is unknown. Therefore, OFL should not be in that motion. So it would be to adopt an ABC of 425 metric tons of Georges Bank yellowtail flounder. We should not give anyone the impression that 425 is an OFL level because it's unknown. The SSC said that.
Is there a second to Dr. Pierce's motion to amend? Mary Beth. We're going to go out to the audience, Ron, on the motion to amend the substitute.
Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. We support the motion to go with the higher metric ton. Just as a little bit more detail, I don't think 425 is, whether it's 400, 425, or 500, is really going to matter. The issue here is what is the impact of not having the right number, even though we all know that there's a lot of doubt. Certainly the resource, Yellowtail Resource and Georges Bank is in trouble. I've been going out every year a lot of times. I see it. I know what's going on. We're missing a lot of fish. Obviously, I've stated time and time again, I think the young of the year are being eaten, and I think even the larger fish are probably being picked off. There's a whole change in the ecosystem. What I would like to suggest, I think the number of yellowtail that the current model is indicating exists, the total biomass, is wrong. Even though the stock's in trouble, I don't think the number is as low as they're projecting. That's based on our work with our seasonal bycatch survey, our swept area analysis. I mentioned that yesterday. I see a lot more yellowtail out there than what they're saying is out there. Certainly not enough to say that it's a healthy stock, but we're going to catch them, and we're going to trigger ACLs, sub-ACLs, and then start triggering AMs. And that's my concern. Now, in the scallop plan, we have a strategy. We have a sort of retrospective analysis. If we trigger our scallop ACL, we go back and recalculate F based on the new information. And I would say that if the council, we've in the scallop fishery, we asked that we not be allowed to land yellowtail. In other words, there's no incentive to target yellowtail. If you do that in the ground fishery, then you could go back and look at what your catches are. And, for example, scallop dredge is a lot easier. You could look at the biomass estimates and project what your bycatch should be. Because they're fishing in areas and not targeting yellowtail. And if, in fact, you find that our bycatch rates for yellowtail are double, triple, quadruple what your projections are based on your estimated biomass is used in the assessment, you should be able to go back and not trigger an AM. I mean, that's the bottom line here is, you know, what is the consequence? And that's my fear. There's a lot more yellowtail out there than we're saying, certainly not enough to say that it's a healthy stock, but that we're going to catch the small amount you give us because the fish are there. And so I really hope that the council takes into account this issue and comes up with a mechanism so that we don't trigger AMs by having this wide range of variability and unknowns, and then all of a sudden we're going to start having significant impacts when we could go back and look at the numbers and say, hey, yeah, maybe we were wrong. Maybe there were double the fish out there that we projected, and we should make a correction to that. So thank you.
Rich? How many folks in the audience want to comment? Rich, Jackie, and Peter. And I ask if you can, you know, make your comments sort of brief.
I'll be very brief. Thanks. Rich Canastra, a ground fish advisor. It bothers me that, you know, we're at the 400 metric ton, and what took place in Canada took place was deja vu from last year with terrible negotiators, and we go up there unprepared. Secondly, is that the 33 metric tons that are caught, I believe Terry made the statement what took place as far as the misreport in the beginning of the year, and that stopped a lot of the boats to catch the yellowtail. there was a survey done, the Yankee Pride, and this is what I heard from the captain, is that on a 20-minute hose, they were getting 11 bushel. As high as 11 bushel, 2 to 3 bushel, in a 20-minute tow out in closed area too. Boats are telling me today they're running away from yellowtail. Granted, they're really good at doing it, running away from yellowtail. But the problem is that we are talking about 25 metric ton. Georgia's Banks is about 200 square miles. 25 metric ton of yellowtail is about 50,000 pounds. I can display that in half of this room between the tables. I have enough room there to display 25 metric ton. 50 metric ton I can display in this area. You're talking about scallop, the economics of scallopers, the economics of draggers for fish for 25 metric ton. It's all about control. It's all about control. And the truth has no agenda, and the day is going to come when the truth comes out that these yellowtails are ass deep, excuse me, they're ass deep out there. But the survey can't catch it. Science is uncertain. So let's kill an industry. Let's kill the draggers. Let's kill the scallopers because of a yellowtail that you don't know anything about. But remember, when you're voting, 25 metric ton is half of this on a 200 square mile Georgia's Bank ocean. It doesn't make sense to me, but I'm Portuguese.
Peter. Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. I think the process issues are secondary here. I think Tom Dempsey actually identified the most important process issue, which is the external one with the Canadians. But I think the real issue here is the biology, and everyone's seems to be avoiding that. It's much easier to talk about the process. I think 400 metric tons is generous. The SSC advice was to cut it as much as practicable. I've heard very little discussion other than from the regional director of what's practicable and what's actually avoidable out there. We heard a long discussion this morning about how successful gear alterations are to avoid problematic stocks. You have a stock based on the science that's in front of you that you can take account of that has a recruitment failure that's collapsed. And you're talking about cutting it 15 to 20% from the 500 metric tons. And at 400 metric tons, I think even with the row adjusted models, the F is expected to exceed FREF by 100% probability. I may be reading that wrong. And the science that I read says that FREF is way too high. You may not know what F should be to be an overfishing limit, but FREF, it seems, is too high, and the probability is that you are still overestimating biomass and underestimating the F out in the water. So I think 400 metric tons is a gift from the agency, and I think Steve Cadron might be closer to the point of saying this should just be a bycatch fishery and gear requirements ought to be in place out there to avoid catch as much as possible. Thank you. Jackie.
Thank you, Jackie O'Dell, Northeast Seafood Coalition. Quick question, either I missed it yesterday or maybe it was mentioned in Jamie's brief presentation, but last week at the Groundfish Committee, Terry Alexander had noted that there was minimal difference in terms of projected rebuilding percentage between 400 and 450 metric tons, and was just wondering, did you, Jamie, during your presentation for the 4 and 425, was there any sort of presentation on what that would, what the difference is in terms of the how much that would rebuild the stock in 1 year? Terry had noted, and Terry, I was actually quite shocked over the, you know, the very small difference. It was like 8 or 9% that if we went to 450, we would have rebuilt the stock by 8% in the year, and if we went to 400, we would rebuild the stock by 9%, if I don't mean just to throw out numbers. But the difference there is that that's a small amount of growth in terms of rebuilding, if those numbers are correct. And we're talking about a fishery here, a groundfish fishery and a scallop industry, where, yes, 25 metric tons, yes, 50 metric tons may seem like it doesn't matter, but it's actually really significant in terms of whether people are going to be able to go fishing or not, fish in areas or not, or whether the scallop industry is going to get the amount of bycatch that they need to be able to go fishing on George's Bank. I mean, that is really significant. So, you know, I think the rebuilding and the projections on how much growth we're going to get out of a stock should also be carefully considered when we're voting on some of these numbers. It means a lot to the fishing industry to be able to get the scraps that are available for these stocks right now. And so in that light, I just wanted to say the Northeast Seafood Coalition supports the 425 for the reason of keeping these fisheries alive, helping the scallop industry, and also helping the groundfish industry. And we have a serious concern about the process that's been discussed over the last couple of weeks, and we will be noting that later today when we have a discussion of providing the RA with authority to make trades for the United States. We're really going to have to make sure we have our communications and process very clear before we start providing additional authority to make additional decisions. Thank you.
Bring this back to the council. In my sense is that further debate will not impact people's minds. Does anybody have a burning comment they want to make? Mark, you haven't spoken yet, neither has John, and then we're going to move the question.
Just briefly, I heard it mentioned earlier that we should consider the 400 metric tons to be a gift. Considering the fact that we have an 82% share of that TAC this year, and that's probably going to go away, I think we're going to look at that as a luxury, you know, in the future. So I can't help but think that we need to invest in the future of this fishery by taking the lowest tack that we possibly can, and learn to live with a minimal bycatch fishery. So, thank you.
John.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to support the motion to 425, and I'm actually going to pass on the process issue because I think both sides had feelings of what went on in Canada. I wasn't there, and I think hopefully we can use it as a learning process going forward of how we're going to work together, and rather than pick fights and try and start the issues. But I'm going to support this because in my little statistical world, hearing and going to the SSC meeting, hearing some of the testimony here today, that 425 and 400 are really the same number. We have retrospective patterns. We have buffers of 25% in a lot of these plans. This is a 6% increase going from 400 to 425. So I think in the spirit of maybe compromise, in the spirit, I think, maybe trying to solve this to the satisfaction of most people, I think that 425 is the number. I think what Jackie just said at the end, if that extra 25s keeps a few more people in business, allows them to go into some other areas, I think it's worth the downside risk of going up by 6%.
Is there any further discussion? Russ.
We understand the process issues, and those are things that we need to work on, but the United States did reach an agreement with Canada regarding quotas on the three transboundary stocks. And yesterday the council affirmed those agreements for two of the stocks for Eastern Georgia's Bank Cod and Haddock. We've heard the SSC advice, less than 500 tons and keep the catches as low as practical. The TMDC agreed to 400 tons, the Groundfish Committee's at 425. know, our regional administrator has stated that the agency cannot approve a shared quota higher than 400 metric tons. And for the record, the Science Center will not certify an ABC in excess of 400 metric tons. I think there's two compelling reasons why the council should support what was agreed to by the TMGC. First, the Georges Bank stock is in poor shape, is showing signs of recruitment failure, high levels of total mortality, apparent low levels of abundance in biomass, and poor condition factor of individual fish. All of these are indicators of impending stock collapse or that a collapse has already occurred. Second, a decision to adopt a different quota level than was agreed upon by the TMGC sends a message to our Canadian colleagues that the Council does not respect the TMGC process. We need the cooperation of the Canadians on at least three issues over the next few months. We need to preserve the option for quota trading. We need to come to an agreement that the current benchmark assessment for yellowtail flounder is not serving us well, and we need to move to more empirical and less model-based approaches for informing the quota-setting process. We need Canadian cooperation to do so. And third, if we are able to secure funding for a second industry-based flatfish survey on Georges Bank, we need permission to access and survey Canadian waters so that we can get a complete picture of the population over the entire stock area. Acknowledging that there are some process issues that we need to address, each member of this council swore an oath to manage our fisheries for the good of the nation. This is the United States of America. The United States of America honors our international processes and their resulting agreements. Thank you.
How many other council members want to speak? Okay, Terry. Then we're going to move the motion to amend the substitute.
Being a member of the TMGC, the negotiation part, I wanted to address Russ's negotiation part. Okay. The Canadians came to us and they said they didn't care if we picked 450 or 400. Okay, so, I mean, they didn't care. It's not like you're going to have to go back to them like last year and try to double the quota. It's, you know, that number is well within the range. So, you know, I think that they would be more than willing to say, okay, with just a simple phone call. But, you know, we had an agreement. And they didn't care. It was well within the range of our agreement. So.
Okay. On the motion to amend the substituted motion, is everyone clear what it is? It's removing OFL. Those who support the motion to amend the substitute, please indicate so. And those who are opposed. You're going to, okay. And those abstaining. Okay, so the motion carries 8-6-2. Okay, we're down to the motion to substitute as amended. Those who support the motion to substitute as amended, please indicate so. And those who are opposed. Eight zero. So the motion fails for lack of a majority. We're down to the main motion. Those who support the main motion of 400 metric tons, please indicate so. And those are opposed. The main motion carries 9-6-0.
Somebody abstain.
Someone abstain? We're short one vote. Let's do it again. Are those who support the main motion? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Okay. And those are opposed?
Okay, my mistake. I think it was
good. Oh, you didn't see this?
Yeah, 9-7.
Okay. Main motion carries 9-7. Tom, time management report. It's 12:25. You want to plug through a few more, or do you? I wouldn't say any of them are too contentious, but it's your call.
Well, it depends how you want to handle the committee motion on the other TMGC negotiated stocks, COD and Haddock. I think we've dealt with those, so we can eliminate those unless there's any objection or any desire to rehash.
Jamie?
There was a motion attached to the committee motion for the quota set that was to authorize the regional administrator to move Eastern Georgia's Bank had a quota from east to west and west to east as the fleet needs it, and that was not discussed yesterday.
Okay. Tom?
Thanks for that, Jamie. My sense is this motion, motion number 9 from the committee, would not require a tremendous amount of discussion or debate, so much as clarification. It passed the committee 5-0-0. So perhaps we could do that before the lunch break and then come back to some of the RA authority issues after lunch.
Okay. Go ahead and make that motion number 9.
I'd move on behalf of the Groundfish Committee to authorize the RA to move EGB Haddock quota from east to west and west to east as the fleet needs it, and accept the EGB Haddock quota of 27,000 metric tons. That's the eastern area quota that we approved yesterday. That motion passed 5-0-0.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Terry?
Yeah, while we were up there in discussions up in Canada, there was a scenario where we have too much Eastern Georgia's Bank Haddock and not enough Western Georgia's Bank at it. So it wouldn't violate our agreement any if we could just move some fish, Haddock, from the east to the west, because there's no biological reason why we can't do that. But then I got thinking about it, and what would happen if there were no Haddock in the west and we wanted to move them back to the east? So that's why it's east-west, west-east.
George?
Yeah, we don't object to the motion, but we think that staff to staff, there may be other ideas that we could look at that might do this better or more easily. So if it's okay, as part of this motion, to ask the PDT to continue looking at other ways to address this issue to see if there might be more effective or efficient ways to do it.
Is there an objection, Tom, to that?
I would just suggest that we perfect this. I believe the intent was to include this as an option in Framework 51, and therefore it would be developed and discussed by the PDT and with agency staff.
The collaboration of staff is essential. Matt and Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could someone enlighten us as to the – Terry, you said there's no biological reason not to be able to shift these back and forth. Can someone please go over that? Because it seems to me that we can't just move fish in the real world, but if they are indeed one mixed stock, then I can go along with this. But I'm just not comfortable not knowing the biology behind what we're doing and the stock area allocations. I'd like to know a lot more about the biological implications of this or the lack thereof.
Jamie, can you address that, please?
So how it works is there's the Georgia's Bank stock of haddock, and it's apportioned into an eastern area and a western area. When the U.S. And Canadian TAC is set, there's an amount that goes into the eastern area. So you have a total amount. That eastern amount is subtracted, and the rest of it goes into the west. The issue here is you can't increase the amount above what the U.S. and Canada agreement has set in the eastern area. But the question is, could you move some out and put some back in as long as you don't go over what the limit that was set?
Matt?
Thank you. So there is no biological reason. This is purely just accounting.
This is accounting.
Thank you.
Mike?
Yeah, actually, I was seeking the same clarification. That's fine. Thank you.
Is there further council discussion? Is there any comments from the audience? Okay, seeing none, we're going to go back and to the motion on the board. Those council members who support it, please indicate so. Motion carries 16-0-0. Tom's going to make a short announcement before we break for lunch. It's 12:30. We'll try to be back here in 1 hour.
Just very quickly, you may have noticed that there's two different documentary teams that are here and will be continuing to film during our meeting. I just want to caution people that their microphones may be left on during breaks, so this could apply also to the periods before and after, so you might want to be careful about where you are having your private conversations unless you don't mind them being recorded. They obviously have the right to be here. I don't know, maybe you can go talk to them and erase all your conversations that happened up till now. But anyway, thank you.
Okay, we're breaking for lunch.